Blog Talk Radio.
Dedicate our lives to this sport. We do thousands of sit-ups in camp. We run hundreds of miles, you know, for the ones that take it serious. And we just dedicate ourselves fully to our craft, man. We watch tape. We you know, we have attitude. We're moving, and we go into that fight just to land on the line.
Boxing fans, this is the Rope-A-Dope Radio Podcast. I'm your host, Chris Carlson. We are live on a Monday, kind of late afternoon, early dinner time. I don't really eat dinner time at dinner time. I don't eat dinner time. I'll stop. Anyway, hopefully these dates right now don't mess with you too much. I did the show last Wednesday, or was it Monday? I can't remember now, but anyway, Tuesdays right now, ever since the pandemic has gone the other way, right, and getting back to normal life, my schedule's a little clogged up at the moment. So hopefully it'll settle in and we'll be able to do every Tuesday. But anyway, we are back to talk boxing, obviously, from this weekend. Shakur Stevenson failed to impress, unfortunately, once again. We'll get into some of that. He is receiving a ton of criticism, some of it rightfully so, a lot of it rightfully so. I mean, the guy did talk about Sugar Ray Leonard. He's cut from the same cloth from and Floyd Mayweather and them. And then, you know, the broadcasters, of course, most broadcasters are just going to lay it on thick, right? But they're doing some shit like after 15 fights and all this, that, and the third. It's just silly. Some of this stuff is just so silly, and it ends up backfiring most of the time, because here you are talking about this guy. Look what he's accomplished in 15 fights compared to Floyd Mayweather and the likes of other guys. It's like, okay, so who'd he fight, though? And don't get me wrong. I don't have a problem with who he's been fighting as a prospect-level guy. I understand the vacant WBO was technically a title. I look at that as a secondary title. Not all WBOs are secondary titles. I'm not saying that. But when it's a vacant top rank, you know, battle, look who he fought. To me, that guy's just not on the highest of levels. But it's going to go down as a WBO championship. Don't get me wrong, of course. But I still look at him as a prospect. So through whatever it is, 15 fights, 16 fights, I don't have a problem with who he's been matched with. A guy like Christopher Diaz was a good fight for him in other fights. But it's just the overhypeness that puts a lot of pressure on him. And like I said, he's doing it to himself too, because he's the one saying everybody's, you know, he's the boogeyman and everybody's ducking him. And like I previously mentioned, I'm cut from the same cloth as a Sugar Ray Leonard. So we'll talk about that. We'll talk about Jose Pedraza's performance as well. Jeremias Ponce stopped Ritson over the weekend as well on DAZN over in the UK. Shouts out to the UK. Obviously, that card was on ESPN. Who's, you know, Stevenson going to match up with next? Is it going to be Herring like it seemed like it was going to be planned? Or is it going to be Valdez? I kind of hope both. So we'll talk a little bit about that, and then we'll preview this busy, 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 yet nondescript weekend. You know, quality over quantity would not be the way I would choose to describe this weekend. You know, that's kind of how I looked at it in my player life. I wasn't going to be a player that, you know, just tried to spray the field. Oh, wow, I used the baseball term that really backfired me on that. But anyway, you know, my point is it was quality over quantity. That's what I believed in, okay? As much quality as possible. Quantity, just to be like, yeah, boom, 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 nah, uh-uh. Anyway, I'm all over the place. Teofimo Lopez defends his belts. It is a mandatory with George Kambosos on Trilla. And by the way, we're going to talk about this new Triller Pass subscription. What am I missing here? If you look at the price point, even if you look at the price point damn near with that year subscription, although I don't know any other fights, but I'm going to give you a year subscription. But, yeah, I'm trying to make sense, if at all possible, to make sense of this Triller Pass subscription because, to me, it's like, so you're going to have a pay-per-view every month then? Because even if it's every other month, the price point just doesn't line up. Anyway, you know, some of these undercard, well, let's just keep going on this. You know, Teofimo Lopez, of course, that headlines it. There is some interesting undercard fights on that. Jermall Charlo against Montiel, some undercard there. Even the JCC and the JCC Junior, if he's still part of the family, Junior's going against Anderson Silva. We got a pay-per-view exhibition as well. The first one on Triller, like I mentioned, with Teofimo, Charlo on Showtime, in the undercard stuff, DAZN, ESPN, Inoue the Monster returns, Mayer returns as well. DAZN, Munguia. Munguia was in somewhat of an interesting fight with Sulecki, but now that's kind of turned to not happening, unfortunately. So we are going to preview this weekend. Like I mentioned, the main events, hopefully they're action-packed. That's what I'm hoping for. Action-packed, fun in the ring, and then a knockout. I think if you look at all the – I think that's possible if you look at all the main events. But there are some – you know, Andy Venice against Jonah Carroll, or, you know, there's undercards. There is some Isaac Dogbe against Adam Lopez. I think that's a good, interesting undercard fight. So that's kind of, I've been telling you this for a little bit here. That's basically what June is. The undercard fights are actually, if I'm looking forward to something, that's mostly what it is. Now, you know, next week the main events, there's some good ones, but it's still not like knock your socks off, so to speak. But anyway, so we will preview and predict the weekend. You know, there's a lot going on. That is for sure. There is plenty of current fight news that we'll get to. Wilder and Fury have a presser tomorrow. I believe it's in L.A. They also announced the undercard fights, and two of the undercard fights I really, really like, man. This is a good undercard, solid undercard. Nothing that just blows you away, but it's contender, or I should say fringe contender and prospect driven, and it's all heavyweight. So I like that idea. There's a little bit of a rumor out there for a fall fight at welterweight, which would be a rematch fight, okay? And this would be a big, big fight. We'll talk a little bit about that. Like I mentioned earlier, we'll try to make some sense, if at all possible, about that Triller Pass subscription. Teofimo Lopez not only in action, but he redid his top-ranked deal. We'll talk a little bit about that. We'll also talk some about that Showtime, the Kings, about the four Kings, Duran, Leonard Hagler and Hearns. That the documentary, I actually just wrapped up the four-part episode series last night. I watched the first two back-to-back. It was super late at night, so I held off, watched the third, and then watched the fourth yesterday. And it was really well done. I really liked how they mixed real-life politics, social stuff, you know, not just here, but in Panama, like just everywhere, everything, you know. And being a really little kid in the 80s, most of them anyway, most of the 80s, you know, I knew a lot about what was going on, or I didn't know a lot about what was going on, I should say. But, you know, as I got into my 20s and obviously even in my 30s, then I learned a whole lot about that time period and you know, growing up under, well, we'll get into it. We'll get into it. Also, of course, some current fight news out there. Like I mentioned, the big PBC welterweight fight that is possibly, quote, don't quote me on this, but possibly in the works. And then, of course, we'll wrap up the show like we normally do with a boxing Twitter segment where we read just bomb-ass, great, meaningful, right-on-the-button tweets, right? So it's not all negative or funny negative or whatever. But we also expose some fanboys and, of course, media members acting as fanboys. That's the boxing Twitter segment. And if anybody's a hardcore fight fan or call themselves hardcores, you're probably on boxing Twitter. Anyway, yeah, so there is a fair amount to talk to. Talk to? Who am I talking to? I'm going to talk to John here in a short little bit. But if this is your first time listening to the Rope-A-Dope Radio Podcast, welcome. It streams live right here on blogtalkradio.com/Rope-A-Dope Radio. Now, you don't have to go to Blog Talk and Rope-A-Dope and download the show directly there or listen to the browser. If you don't want to, you can find the platform on Apple Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Player FM, TuneIn, Stitcher, Spreaker, really almost across the board. We're also part of the Grueling True Sports Podcast Network, which can be found almost everywhere. While you're at it, why don't you head on over to thegruelingtruth.com. You know, it's boxing, football, basketball, baseball, hockey, everything in between. And one more thing, if you're thinking about cutting the cord or you have, you're not quite happy, I got something for you. It's called AT&T TV. Plans start as low as $69.99 a month, simple pricing. No hidden fees, no annual contracts. Of course, you can stream it anywhere on any device. The cloud DVR is available. And if you sign up for the choice package right now, you get a free year of HBO Max. That's AT&T TV. Okay. Now we're going to get to the recap because, you know, if you've listened to the show, we like to start in the ring. Now, there is some breaking news that happens from time to time where we start outside the ring, but we like to start inside the ring. And, I mean, main event-wise, we're going to get to it, right? Pedraza, these little plus 145s and plus 210s and even Figueroa was almost, at some places, a plus 300. These little pluses have been paying off, you know. Donaire, the only one that didn't pay off in the last, what, like four out of the last, what, 5 or 6 weeks was Jose Ramirez because he was a slight favorite, right? Yeah, he was a slight. He's a slight underdog. What am I saying? But once again, a plus works out. Pedraza takes out Julian Rodriguez. But we'll get into that in just a second. Nakatila didn't have much to offer for the highly skilled Shakur Stevenson, who, you know, I've mentioned this plenty of times. The first handful of outings as a professional fighter transitioning from the amateur game, where, of course, he won a silver medalist, or he was a silver medalist. Remember the Mike Conlan thing? They were lining up. Conlan was dusting off these dudes easily, looking like he had power. People were saying, Shakur, man, you're too amateurish. Then all of a sudden, a couple more bouts go by. Shakur kind of laps him in the prospect level anyway, the rising prospect level, whereas Conlan kind of fell off, and I think he's at 122 still, or did he go back to 122? I forgot. I think he is. But, you know, Stevenson now kind of seems like some, and so he looked really good, like, oh, dude, he's going to have a little power, this, that, and the third, just to finish what I was saying. And then Stevenson now lately, what is this, 3 in a row, that amateur stuff is starting to come out. And the lack of activity in early rounds is one thing, right? It's not the stupidest thing to do to be safe for a little bit, figure the guy out, let him walk into a trap and whatnot, which that right hook, what, two separate times should have been the first knockdown. It was two separate knockdowns, really. First one didn't get called. I suppose if you look at the ref angle, the ref's angle may have, because the feet were lined up. They were stepping on each other's feet all night. But the feet were lined up to where it did kind of look like a trip, like from a certain angle. It's easy to see the replay and be like, dude, you could see the space between their feet. That wasn't a trip. That was a right hand, you know, counter knockdown. And the other one, he did get it. Once you've kind of been like, all right, dude, we all know you're not on my level. I'm not saying there you just got to dust this dude off and just spark him out, concussion punch him, or else it doesn't count. You know, I'm not really one of those guys that just love knockouts and that's it. Don't get me wrong. I love me some knockouts, and that's what gets everybody super excited. But the problem with Stevenson is, I mean, he was averaging like, I can't even remember, was it like 20, I can't remember, 20-something, mid-20s to like, was it even 30 punches around? I don't know. It wasn't a lot. It took him like maybe to the fifth round or fourth, fifth round just to land double-digit punch stats on this dude, and nothing, I'm not trying to rip this dude. What was this for the vacant WBO with Bob Only, the vacant top rank belt? It was just a kind of a, you know, a non-performance. It was a very subpar performance. It was lacking in a lot of ways, and it just took a while. You know, you saw Shakur jabbing and pot-shotting. Nakatila, you know, even in the second round, he landed a nice left hook. And I think that's that second round where that right hand should have been called a knockdown. In the fourth round, it was, like I mentioned. But come fifth and sixth round, especially when he got tagged, he started moving a whole lot. I mean, a whole lot. And I don't know, dude. He just, the whole fight, it was like just settling for one shot here and there. You know, now his opponent, I think they said he landed 28 punches out of 305 thrown. And 305, you know, for that many rounds is not many. But, you know, they're trying to play it off like it was just a defensive masterpiece. And had this been against Oscar Valdez or something like that, or even Jamel Herring, you know, that would be different. But, and I'm not trying to put those guys in the Hall of Fame either, but, like, I guess once you say you're Sugar Ray Leonard, you're in that cloth in Floyd Mayweather, and then they do the big old bonanza of cherry-picking some through 15 fights, well, let's go 2 to 3 years, or let's go in the first 4 years compared to the first 4 years, because that's all that matters, or your first titleist. Who was Floyd's first title against? Oh, that's right, a lineal champ who hadn't lost at the weight class, who had only stepped up to 135, Geraldo Hernandez I'm talking about, and lost to Oscar. He hadn't lost. Now, sure, he was a vet. He was older, no doubt. He retired, but Floyd, look what Floyd did to him, though. You know what I mean? And Hernandez said it himself, like, this dude's going to be champion for a while. And they had a bond, and Mayweather talked about how he respected him, and I believe he, you know, paid for his funeral fees and all that for the family and all that, because he always respected that he gave him that shot, you know, that title shot. And, you know, I remember that story, Larry Merchant, you know, talking to Roger Mayweather, RIP, saying, you know, this is too much. This is too much. This is going to be too much for your son. And was it Roger or was it Floyd Sr. that said, I think it was Roger, said we're going to cook him up like chicken, like 9 minutes in the – there was a time, just off base, when I was once again a kid, that people used to put – literally used to put chicken, raw chicken, in the microwave for like 10 minutes, and it was good to go.
when I look back at that time, and if you're home, you do that, hey, man, I've partaken that when I was a kid. I'm not trying to diss you, but damn, that's fucked up.
Anyway, I remember that line, though. We're going to cook them like chicken 9 minutes in the mic or something like that. Anyway, my point is, and I'm going all over the place, because there's not much to fucking talk about in this fight, to be honest with you. But, yeah, just settling for a nice shot here and there. And then moving out of range. And like I said, I'm not saying go risk it. He kept using the word scary. This guy was scary. And some people took that as I was scared of him. And, you know, obviously he's worried about getting hit flush in fights, especially the last few, but which you should worry about it to an extent, of course. But I think he meant like the guy was scared, so he kept not wanting to, you know, commit or something too. Neither of these guys really were committing, but it was just a blasé blah, like I said this next week, a nondescript performance. It just, it was lackluster, dude. And Stevenson is being hyped like he's Mayweather, the next Mayweather, and it's just too early. And like I've mentioned, I don't actually have one bit of problem how he's been moved as far as the opponent selection. Clearly, he got like a secondary vacant belt at 126. I didn't mind that fight at the time, Joette Gonzalez, right? I don't mind the Christopher Diaz. I don't mind some of these fights because I look at him as a prospect becoming a contender. And at 130... considering he's fought at 130, I'm not, you know, you got to put him in contender range. I'm sure as hell not going to put him in the top 10, pound for pound, like I saw in the last month or so. You know, few, not many, but a few people have said that. But in the same breath, you can't lose sight of he's very skilled. And when he shows it, like a, he wasn't even barely doing two-punch combos. Like, we get sick of a 1-2, right? We get sick of that. 1-2, 1-2. It's all this guy does is throw 1-2, and I'm not talking about Shakur. But just in general, like, folks, boxing folks complaining about someone. Dude, that's all he's got is the 1-2, or it's all he's looking for is that left hand or whatever, you know? My thing is, you don't have to throw a 5-6-7-punch combination, rapid fire. We're not even talking about that, but when dude's not on your level, time to try to get dude out of there or at least dominate him. You have to clear-cut win the fight and look good doing it. And looking good doing it doesn't mean concussion punch all the time. It means, you know, like if dude would have landed something big in a couple more rounds, he could have won the round because there wasn't much going on is what I mean. Like, we all know Stevenson's better than this dude. We knew it going in. Now we know it even more. But, you know, the guy has a lot of potential, man, and he's winning a lot of rounds. And I've been giving him a pass for a little bit, these last three now. They're starting to add up. And we have to see him against Herring and then Oscar Valdez because it looks like Oscar has a fight already. Herring did make a good point about, well, when I wanted to do something for more legacy at the time with Valdez, who's been a quote-unquote champion, right? He's been a champion at two different weight classes now. People were saying I was ducking Stevenson. But when Stevenson now doesn't want to fight me, you know, Herring was making a good point. Now he wants to fight Oscar. But he was, you know, screaming that everybody's ducking him. Well, I just think he should fight Herring, who's a solid veteran fighter, and then let Oscar Valdez fight who he's going to fight because he's already going to fight somebody. And then fight him after, whether that's in December, you know, or whatever. Or maybe later than that, you know. Maybe it'll be, or not later, you're not going to be much later than December, right, in this year. But you know what I'm talking about. Maybe it'll be, you know, next year early or something like that. But, yeah, dude, it was just a really nondescript, nothing to talk about type performance. And I'm not going to sit there and, you know, destroy him for it and all that. I mean, I've definitely laid laid it on him a little bit, but not overly. You know what I mean? Not overly, because I'm not going to jump off this kid like he can't, you know, perform at a high level. You know, I think he has the capability. You just got to put it all together. You know, I heard a rumor from a couple different sources now. Did he say it? People were saying it that he said he was sick in the press conference. I must have missed that. Maybe I cut it off a little. It was only like a 7 or 8 minute clip that I saw. I don't think maybe I turned it off or something came up when I was watching it. That's probably what it was. But sick or not, like, you know, I don't know. There's just so much movement as if there wasn't much, like, as if it was a 12-round fight that you had won every round and you were just milking the last chunk of it. I can see that, but there's times where he's just like, dude, what are you doing, man? Like, just throw more punches. Mix up your combinations, you know? Like, don't look just to counter and that's it, you know? And I know, like, a lot of people, whether it's, you know, within Top Rank, some of them are trying to spin it and say, look at that defense. And that's cool. You know, I've never said the guy doesn't have a lot of skill. And maybe, you know, he'll have to show it once a guy like Valdez, who is going to come at him, or a guy like Herring that's going to throw some meaningful punches every round. Maybe he just needs that. You know what I mean? Maybe he just needs that. But like I was saying, so, you know, I hope it's Herring and then Valdez, like I mentioned. That's what I'm assuming, because it sounds like Oscar Valdez already has an opponent. So it makes sense to do that route. And hopefully Shakur is just talking about he don't want to fight Herring anymore. He wants to fight Valdez next. But why wait? Why wait? Because Valdez isn't fighting until, like, what, September, something like that? So you're not going to wait and then have to wait for him to recoup and have another camp. And just stay active. You got to at least fight one more time this year. So, yeah, wasn't really impressed, but, you know, not jumping on this kid like he's not shit or something like that. You know what I mean? Got a lot of skill, but he needs to kind of capture it in a bottle and use it all in fights. Sometimes, you know, you need someone to bring that out of you. The other card, though, Julian Rodriguez, the unbeaten prospect at the time. What was he, 21-0? Something like that, like 13 or 15, something like that. Knockouts against Jose Pedraza, who's had this nice run in the second part of his career, especially at 140. I got to admit, I didn't necessarily see him having that much top 10, you know, I didn't see him in the top 10 per se at 140. Not that this, oh, now he's, you know, I mean, he lost a fight recently, you know, against a top 10 guy, top, you know, five guy, Zapata. And there was a clear difference in that fight. But once again, these plus 125s, plus 145, plus 160, whatever, you know, and more, plus 200s and beyond, like Figueroa and Nonito Donaire. And, you know, I mean, this stuff has been happening here now. So it's been fun. It's been fun. And this was close to a 50-50 fight on paper, but once it got in the ring, it was clear as day, Jose Pedraza. I mean, you know, a couple of decent lands early and late for Rodriguez. I actually gave him the first round. But after that, it was hard to give him a round, to be honest with you. Well, maybe one more round, like the fourth round or maybe the sixth round or something like that. You know, there could have been some of that. It just seemed like Pedraza was landing the better shots, that right hand to the head, and then he'd switch it up and throw to the body. That was pretty meaningful punching right there. And by, like, the second or third round, whatever happened to Rodriguez's eye, Andre Ward even pointed out there's something, like, his eyes, both of his eyes are starting to swell now. Clearly, one, his left eye was happening. Just the cleaner punching, the cleaner shots, clean jab even. Like, Pedraza was kind of doing his inside-out stuff where he will come at you. but Rodriguez would be like, oh, here's a good punch, but not enough, that type of thing. There was some back and forth, don't get me wrong, but not enough, not nearly enough. In the eighth round, early off hand to the head and then to the body, he kept pressuring. Pedraza did more and more, and then didn't make it into, what, the ninth round. TKO, left eye, couldn't see out of it. Fight over. So Pedraza got a nice, solid win. Like I said, he's had a nice, you know, his performance that he won a few rounds off of Lomachenko at 135 was good. It didn't seem like for a while Lomachenko could dominate him. He's always been a solid fighter. I mean, he was, people kind of forget, but he was the favorite. Like a 2.5-1, 3-1. It was a clean favorite. I don't exactly remember how it closed 100%, but over Gervonta Davis back, you know, years ago now, a few years ago anyway. But good performance from him. I thought he looked, you know, pretty damn solid. And, you know, just it just basically keeps him in line. You know, it keeps him in line for some solid fights at 140. And who knows what's going to happen with the undisputed stuff. And how many belts are going to come loose, or just one belt or whatever. We don't know what Josh Taylor's going to do. Will he take on Teofimo Lopez? Will he go up? Would he go up to fight Terrence Crawford just for a fight and come back down, or would he stay up there? Because, you know, the way Spence is talking, within a year, those belts will be loose. So I'm not sure exactly where he goes, but no matter what, it was a very clean, crisp, efficient Jose Pedraza in that ring that we saw on Saturday. Also on DAZN, Jeremias Ponce really pretty much handled Ritson. They, you know, they basically threw the towel in. That's how it ended. Was it Dave Ritson, I think, his father? But, you know, I mean, there was some... Like, there was, like, a mean left hook that Ponce landed on Ritson in the – it was the first round, I believe. Left hand to the body. And, you know, he just – he kept bringing pressure a lot of the fight. Now, Ritson, there was, like, two or three uppercuts that he got hit with Ritson in the third or fourth round. But then he came back. And he had, you know, some nice body work. And so there was back and forth in the fourth and fifth. And there was plenty of, okay, this is going to be something here, you know. But basically, Ritson started to go in such a defensive mode. And the combination punching took over and, you know, was a clear win for Ponce. So that was a, you know, very good performance. We'll see where he goes next. But overall, pretty mild weekend, to be honest with you. Of course, there were some other undercard fights and there were some knockouts and stuff, but it wasn't, there's not a whole lot to discuss as far as, you know, meaningful fights or whatever, or you know, involving some meaningful contenders or champions. You know what I mean? So, yeah, overall, pretty much a ho-hum card. Not much to talk about. When it comes to that card and the other card with DAZN as well. I mean, like I said, that was an entertaining fight, though, on DAZN. But, you know, it was a mild weekend. It was a mild weekend. And this weekend we got coming up, and actually I see John on the line now. I'm going to go to him in just a moment here. We will preview this, you know, quantity over quality type weekend. There is a term that's used in a lot of ways. I first heard it in acting and in filmmaking, less is more. And that would not be a way I'd describe that. I'd flip it this weekend. More is less in this one. This is quantity, not quality. Some of these undercard fights, like Adam Lopez, as I mentioned, and Isaac Dogbe, sign me up for that. Andy Benes against Jonah Carroll. Sign me up for that. That's interesting. There's an interesting women's fight. You know, like Inoue, I always like watching him. He's in there with a no-hoper. But Michaela Meyer, you know, is returning. Munguia supposed to be in an interesting fight with Sulecki, but that folded. So, you know, it's just it's one of these weekends where you're like, really, dude? All these? But then again, do we need these? I don't know. It's one way I'm like, why are we crowding one weekend so much, right? And it sucks most for the pay-per-view on Triller. Well, I guess it sucks for the Julio Cesar Chavez and Chavez Jr. going against Anderson Silva, too. We got two pay-per-views, but one of them is an exhibition pay-per-view. But on one hand, it's like, well, these type of fights that we just mix it all on one weekend and just get them over with, I can look at it like that as a positive because we're going to get some good undercard fights rather than these spread out, and, oh, this is going to be an individual weekend just for this mediocre main event. You know, I don't know. I guess it's like, it's just weird, dude. It's just a weird weekend. It really is, man. Anyway, we'll get into some of that. Like I said, there is some rumors about a big PBC welterweight fight rematch for the fall. Hopefully they can get that done. Hopefully that's not just rumors. And then the Wilder Fury undercard heavyweight driven, which I think is pretty dope. It's a solid undercard, and they're going to have a presser tomorrow. And we'll also, as I mentioned earlier, we're going to try to make sense of this Triller Pass subscription, because when you look at the price point, even when you look at the yearly sub, right, like DAZN yearly sub gave us, what, $8.33 a month? That's damn good. Even doing that, it's $25 a month. We're going to get into the price point, and also, like, so does that mean, because I remember them saying, like, anywhere from four to maybe five or six pay-per-views a year, so let's just say six, right? That's every other weekend or every other month. That's still, you're just breaking even then with the pay-per-views then. It just, and I understand, like, three songs of Justin Bieber are archives chilling waiting for me. Or isn't it supposed to be J-Lo this weekend? I understand there's some value there, but, I mean, it's not value to me. Because people are already paying a subscription for unlimited, besides Jay-Z, unlimited music, right? So a lot of people are already paying a decent amount per month for music. So, and if I'm going to watch, like, watching music live beats it, period, right? So, like, there are some groups and bands and genres and whatever, pretty good live. Great live sometimes, right? It's not, I'm not just talking about, like, rock and instrumental music where there's a whole band and stuff like that. There are, like I mentioned, I mean, they had a couple of them that, you know, they put on a performance. So, but I just don't, we don't know the schedule. We know Oscar De La Hoya is going to fight somebody. He's trying to call out Canelo. we know Holyfield's going to fight somebody in an exhibition. But they want me to sub up for a year when I don't even, I don't know. It's weird. It's weird, dude. It's weird. Wait till we get into the price points and all that. It just doesn't line up. But yeah, there's more current fight news and all that good stuff. Teofimo reworking the deal. So we'll get through all this. Long story short, let's bring in John, a great boxing mind, and see what's going on with him. What's going on, John? How you doing, man?
Hey, Chris, great to be here as always. And I like the way you put it about this upcoming weekend. I think is we've got a lot of quantity over quality coming up this weekend.
Man, I mean, it really is just like, wow, okay. I mean, these things are happening. You know, I guess it's on the schedule. That I'm, if I'm reading it correctly, this is on the schedule. It is what it is. Before we get into some of that stuff, we will be talking about the Kings, having to do with the Four Kings Showtime documentary, not just the documentary itself, but, you know, John and I, more older gentlemen than a lot of people, let's say on boxing Twitter, you know, we lived through some of that stuff too. So we're going to talk about it, what it meant to us just in general too. So we're going to have that segment to close it out, but to close out John's segment, I should say. You know, Shakur Stevenson was in the ring this weekend, so was Jose Pedraza. You know, Hope and Herring and then Valdez is next. He's getting a lot of critical, you know, attention here off of his performance. Some of it is his own doing, both with his performance, John, and him talking about he's in the same cloth of Sugar Ray Leonard and Mayweather, and then they're doing this big promo before, which doesn't really help stuff because, you know, if it's a dud performance, then you're like, this is the guy that they're saying Floyd Mayweather? Like, people are going to get turned off by that, casuals anyway. What was your thoughts on Stevenson? And it, you know, it's not like he did a ton wrong, you know, but these last three fights, he's just kind of left something, not just something, but a fair amount on the table. You know, he's kind of picking at his food. He's not finishing his plate.
Yeah, I think, you know, he's a young guy, only 23. I got to admit, I've got a soft spot for him myself because he's from New Jersey, like I am. But that said, I think the criticism here was warranted. I mean, the fight was painfully boring. And while Stevenson was saying, well, I was worried about this guy Nakatali's right hand, I mean, the guy hadn't faced any kind of formidable opposition. You know, he wasn't, you know, this is what's good when you have transnational doing rankings and the ring still around. I mean, you know, you don't have to go by this alphabet stuff. I mean, if you're having trouble getting a bead on the guy, at least look at it and see, you know, is he ranked by the ring or transnational? And, you know, they both rank. You know, and I'm on transnational 17 weight classes, which I personally don't even feel is necessary. I don't think we need more than probably nine. But with that said, if you've got independent, you know, and transnational certainly independent, you got independent organizations ranking 17 weight classes, and the guy's not ranked, and that was the case here. I mean, that's a good rule of thumb, and it doesn't mean every ranked guy is always that formidable. But when they're not ranked, I mean, what really was the concern here? You're fighting as an ESPN headliner, big opportunity to market yourself. And, you know, people then will use the example, well, you know, sometimes Floyd Mayweather had some performances that weren't that entertaining, or Pernell Whitaker. And, you know, there might be some truth to that, but I was thinking about that issue a little bit over the last couple of days. And, you know, let's face it, Chris, as you've said, you know, we were talking about the Four Kings part, you know, you and I have been around a little longer and seen more stuff. Even in the Floyd Mayweather era when he was an Olympian, Olympic boxing was bigger. Certainly it was huge when Pernell, you know, was a U.S. Olympian. You know, those fights were all in prime time. Even the trials were on in prime time in 84. And, you know, you had Pernell Whitaker and the other gold medalists in 84 made their pro debuts on national TV on ABC. Why I say all that?
Yeah, a bunch of them on one car. That was awesome.
That was. And why I'm saying that with Shakur Stevenson is he's an Olympic silver medalist, but Olympic boxing isn't getting the exposure, you know, like it was in past decades. And, you know, it's not the same. So what I'm pointing out here is he doesn't have the base of a Pernell Whitaker or even a Floyd Mayweather to fall back on. So, you know, I think when he gets an ESPN opportunity, he needs it more than those guys in the past, even, because, you know, he hasn't had that kind of exposure. And to just stink it out like that against the guy you're a huge favorite against, and to Shakur's credit, I mean, I retweeted it. He tweeted it out moments after the fight. He wasn't happy with what he did himself. Now, that's from the entertainment perspective. And from the in-ring perspective, there has been moments, even since Shakur Stevenson turned pro, in his first couple of fights even, where there has been moments where the power has seemed a bit lacking. Now, what we're going to have to see how it plays out is, if you look at some modern punch stat type analytical data, and frankly, some of the type that matters, I mean, he's just he's just not getting hit. And, you know, he is hitting his opponent. So he has that in his favor. But what we can say is, at the least, nights like Saturday night are just not making it from an entertainment perspective. I mean, you know, and I think that, you know, a fight with Herring, I don't even think Herring can press him enough personally. I think, you know, Herring could maybe make it close, but I could see, you know, Shakur kind of stinking that one out too and beating him easily, because despite what just happened with Frampton, Herring's not a power puncher. You know, he's not a threat like that. So, and he's in a, you know, a guy in his mid-30s. So I actually do personally think it would take a Valdez, somebody of that skill level who brings some power, to maybe bring out this Shakur Stevenson that are people are thinking he's going to have to be challenged before we see that. And you know, we might get that then, because if you have a guy with enough talent and enough power threat to put pressure on him and make him do more, then maybe some of that's going to come out. Or if you're kind of down on Shakur Stevenson, like I said, from the beginning of his career, there have been performances where the power seemed to be lacking. So I hope he just needs to be pressed, because, you know, there does seem to be star potential there. But the thing that might be up in the air is just those moments that we've had, like Saturday night, where the power did not seem to be there.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, he's shown us plenty, as you mentioned too, of even those right hand, you know, counters and all that. He's definitely shown us plenty of skill, and so I'm definitely not jumping off the bandwagon or something like that, or going to dump
right
on this kid to the extent where you see on Boxing Twitter and some other folks. But yeah, we're going to see, you know, what Herring and Valdez has for him, and see how he performs. Jose Pedraza looked pretty damn good against Rodriguez, who this was close to a 50-50 on paper.
Yeah, Rodriguez ended up even moving to a slight favorite from an opening that was about 50-50. And another Jersey guy, had a soft spot for him, you know, from Bergen County, New Jersey. But, you know, I got to say, I was really disappointed in, you know, Julian Rodriguez. You know, he just, I think, you know, I thought this was, full disclosure, I thought he was in position for this to be a breakout performance. And then I started to hedge my bets a little bit when I saw him coming overweight. But I was hopeful that, you know, that wasn't from lack of preparedness. But, you know, when I looked at that fight, watching it, you know, he didn't quite seem to have the same snap. He seemed to, you know, swell up quickly. And, you know, he didn't seem to have quite the same snapping his punches, and he ended up swelling up enough, as we know, that he got stopped. And I've got to say, I mean, of course, that's completely on him, but he, you know, he's a young fighter, even though he is in the mid-20s at this point. But people make mistakes, and, you know, this might be a case where the guy in his first test, you know, anxiety can come up, even when you're a fighter, and all kinds of apprehensions, and sometimes people respond, sometimes they don't, sometimes they make a mistake and respond the next time. But I think he just didn't respond to this moment in the preparedness for whatever reason. And, you know, coming in 1.4 over, and if you saw, there was some good addition by the commentary team, at least as the fight was getting ready to go. I think Tessitore had mentioned that, you know, because you didn't hear it that much right before the fight then, that I guess they wanted him to weigh in again the day of the fight, and he wouldn't even do it. So, you know, look, I'm not a physician, but you know enough about the human body and your own athletic experiences and following the sport that it's just, even if sometimes people look at the weight advantage, there's other things that go against you. You know, like, I'm just going to make up a number, but when they're talking like they were, it's probably not out of the ballpark. I mean, if he was 161 pounds or something like that when he went in there, that's, you know, that's still not necessarily good if you're putting on, you know, 20 pounds, you know, or almost 20 pounds in a day or two. It's just not good for you. And I think you could compare it to certain sports. Like, frankly, even if you go to, you know, track and field, or, you know, running a marathon, I mean, you don't, you know, you do different sport, but still you don't put on too much weight. You know what I mean? It's like carrying a bowling ball.
Right.
And I think, you know, if you have even a certain frame, even if you're a lower weight fighter, yeah, at some point there's an advantage, but it's a fine line. And, you know, if the guy was already not in great condition and then, you know, the day of the fight, he's at like 160 pounds or something like that, because he didn't have the snap. But with all that said, you know, let me also add, I think there was a little bit of a misconception. I agree with you, Chris. You know, when you watch the fight, and I did agree with the judges. I mean, I think myself, I thought even if Pedraza looked good, and he is a good, solid fighter, as you said, I think 2 points down on the cards was realistic. And why I mention that is, look, that's Julian Rodriguez that at his own fault, but at whatever percentage he was, not 100% of what he's capable of, he was in the fight. You know, even though Pedraza had a lot of real good moments and busted him up, he was very reliant on the jab. In other words, you know, he had moments where he was opening up a little more at the power and he performed very well, but, you know, he was jabbing. He had a lot of caution there. I think, you know, a properly prepared Rodriguez, the fight was there. This was a missed opportunity. And, you know, it's going to be a question and take too much of a beating. You know, can he learn from this, come back with anything? And then on the plus side, you know, Pedraza was very well prepared, performed very well. And, you know, he's right on the cusp of legit top 10 at 140. So, you know, I think maybe with politics, I mean, you know, he's with Top Rank and Josh Taylor in the U.S. is with Top Rank.
Right.
So that provides opportunity for him. You know, maybe somebody else at 140 doesn't have. So, I mean, I think if he was maybe with a promoter that had it even more at 140 or in that type of a promotional situation, maybe, you know, you wouldn't say he's going to go right to a big fight, but maybe he's not far away with Top Rank having Taylor, and of course they've got Ramirez. So, you know, there might be if Teofimo Lopez moves up, I mean, you know, he with Top Rank, he's in a pretty good position for a good payday.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Now, as far as this weekend goes, you know, we already talked about how it's, you know, there are some undercard fights that I'm looking forward to watch and whatnot. Do you think George Kambosos, who, you know, there is a, like, his last fight with Lee Selby, I think it was like a split decision, but he won it. And now Selby was probably best at 126. He did jump up the lightweight probably too quick. And then I think he fought Mickey Bay and beat him in a split decision. You know, I guess that's enough, as we know. And I'm not trying to single out Kambosos here, because plenty of guys get, you know, mandatory shots for even less than that. So I'm definitely not trying to dump on him. He's a good talker, John, this Kambosos, and they've been hyping this thing up, and Triller's been trying to push it anyway. I haven't seen an ad just yet, especially like on YouTube, which I'd assume is going to happen here. But, you know, what's this card do for you? We could talk a little bit about the main event. Michael Hunter is taking on Mike Wilson. I mentioned Andy Venez against Jonah Carroll. That's a 10-rounder. I think there's some interesting stuff right in that fight. Charles Conwell, an upcoming prospect at 154 fights. So there is, you know, there is something there. There's not about it. Cruz Dizern. Dizern, I think it is. She, you know, it's for the undisputed super middleweight, you know, title. So there's something on here. But where do you think Kambosos can be competitive in this fight? Because that's kind of what I'm hoping this weekend, John, that some of these B-sides, clear B-sides, are going to be competitive. So at least maybe we get a knockout, but a moments of two-way before that. What do you think of this card in general?
I'll go with the main event first, Chris, and I'm going to go out on a limb a little bit because I think people, I already have been doing it, but I sense actually I'm in the minority here. So, you know, it's the old thing. Somebody's going to be right and somebody's going to be wrong. I think Cambosos is overmatched here. I think a lot of Teofimo Lopez, you know, and let me, I'm starting to, and I think it's been a good thing. Like we just talked about the Julian Rodriguez example, you know, assuming Teofimo Lopez doesn't have any trouble making the weight, you know, and he's in good shape.
That's
we've got to give that as a qualifier because, you know, I don't want to be saying this stuff. And then we're sitting here on Friday and Teofimo Lopez,
right,
you know, weighs in at 138 or something like that. Because those things do happen. And then, you know, then for me, and probably literally, it's got to be all bets are off. But my opinion here, based on an in-shape, prepared Teofimo Lopez, let's say at least as prepared as he was for Comey, I think that he should take Cambosos out easily. And you know, why I say that is, one, you know, how good I think Teofimo Lopez is, because I think he's a guy who has boxing skills, speed, and power. So that makes him a very, very difficult guy to deal with, as you saw the trouble Lomachenko had dealing with him. Because let's face it, when Lomachenko didn't throw any punches in the first six rounds, you know, it's part on him because he's being cautious, but it's part also because he sees what's in front of him and he sees how dangerous Teofimo Lopez is. And, you know, we know how much talent Lomachenko has. So, you know, it's part because of Lopez that Lomachenko's not letting his hands go for six rounds. You know, he sees the danger. So, what I'm, you know, I saw Cambosos against Selby, and boy, I almost never, and I'm a little bit in the minority here too, but again, this is how I felt watching the fight. I almost never agree with the British commentators. You know, you get a lot of bias there. And, you know, of course, Selby was the British guy in the fight. Cambosos, Australian. But I thought Selby did enough to edge it out. I mean, I don't, you know, it was close.
It could have been a draw, no doubt.
Yeah, I thought that
two of those
like
cards,
a draw. And, you know,
I believe it's two of those cards is really bad. I think one of them was like 118, 110 or something like that.
Yeah, I mean, you know, and Selby can't punch. You know, he wasn't a big puncher as a featherweight, and he's up at lightweight. So, you know, I mean, Cambosos wasn't terrible or anything, but, you know, that and then, you know, a close fight with Mickey Bay. I agree with you. You know, there's mandatory so bad out there that Cambosos being undefeated with those two wins, yes, that is better than a lot of these horrible alphabet mandatories. And, you know, he is number 10 in transnational. Just me personally on my thoughts and my votes on the ranking, he wouldn't crack it. But again, we have consensus, and the consensus works well a lot of times. So he's at 10, but even there, only 10. So, I mean, to me, he's a guy on the bubble there. I just think a prepared Lopez should highlight real him. I mean, that's what I'm looking for. You know, kind of an example I would look at, I mean, and really I'm not trying to knock Cambosos because early in his career, Menard did get knocked out by a guy who had a losing record, but then he went on a great run. You know, Kate had some
right.
highlight real KO guys on the fringe, you know, failed against Beltran then on a bigger step up. But then that's when he got blown out and won highlight reeled by Teofimo Lopez. You know, just my own opinion is, you know, Menard does have some speed and power. You know, I mean, this is to me, you know, is Cambosos, you know, that different than a Mason Menard? To me, he's not. You know, now, like
just
I said, we'll see
power.
If I get proven wrong. Right, exactly. I think it doesn't mean Cambosos is going out in a round, but to me, a prepared Teofimo Lopez should get him out. So with all the other box, and I, again, just for pure entertainment value, I thought that, you know, we've talked about it before. I thought the Jake Paul Askren thriller, that was their second. Myself, I thought it was kind of funny and entertaining. I didn't regret. I only did it the last second. I was like, I can't believe I'm doing this. But on that one, I didn't regret throwing out $49.99. But I just don't, you know, talking to the fans, I don't see this being a $49.99 as much as I think a Lopez. I mean, I think he blows out Cambosos. I mean, the rest of the card, I like Michael Hunter. He's a legit top 10 heavyweight. He's an American heavyweight that, you know, maybe deserves a little more attention. I don't blame Michael Hunter for signing with Triller and trying to maybe see if he can find a path to build himself up. I mean, I think he's a guy that's kind of good and gotten savvy at trying to build himself up, and I think he's going to keep at that and maybe do that. But I don't
WBA
blame him for doing
is
it,
a clean route. It's the cleanest
right.
route
he's
to a secondary belt, that's for sure.
Right. And he's put himself on it, and then he might get there. But, you know, he's in a mismatch. I mean, this is just a guy that I don't blame Michael Hunter for going with Triller here, but it's a mismatch. I love what I see at Conwell. He reminds me a little bit of a Dwight Muhammad Cowie in the best sense, you know, even though he's a little bit lower of a weight. But, again, you know, I don't think he's in with a guy that's really competitive with him. I mean, you know, a guy like Vences has seen better days. I mean, John O'Carroll normally has no power, but then he took out Quigg. Looked good doing it too, but, you know, I just don't know that's a fight of anybody going anywhere. So I think Triller you could argue they misfired on the whole thing, but when they moved the date away from the Mayweather weekend, that might have had some good reasoning, but to just plop it in the weekend full of other boxing that, like you said, people are already subscribed to some channels, or you've got the ESPN basic cable option. I think this thing's going to be a disaster. And then trying to go mainstream, like, and I actually like Jim Lampley as a commentator. When I've had this criticism, it's not because I don't like Lampley, but still, with what Triller's trying to do, I mean, bringing in Jim Lampley and trying to make it look legitimate, like appealing to old boxing fans when Triller had this unique thing for the first two shows, it's just bizarre to me. It's actually whacked. I mean, I don't get it. I just don't. And when you don't get it, you know, most of the times it's headed for disaster. So I don't even know what the strategy is here.
Right. And, you know, someone just messaged me. I'm wrong about Jennifer Lopez. They had billed her as if she's going to be there. And maybe she was only free on that June 5th date, and she's not performing. And I've heard Teofimo say J-Lo and all that, but I'm wrong. I actually have the list here. It says music performances by Mike Towers, Meek Mill. A lot of people know Meek Mill, of course.
Right.
And a couple other guys. Hosted by Mario Lopez and Snoop Dogg, with the commentator, like you said, Jim Lampley. So I was actually wrong. They don't got J-Lo anymore. But here's the thing, and we're going to get to some of the other stuff, but it's not like we're breaking down many fights, right, John, when it comes to these fights anyway. So we might as well talk around the edges here. But make this make sense, which even in your great boxing/lawyer mind, I don't think you're going to be able to do it here, John. $29.99 a month, okay? So that means you get
I'm already laughing.
You get boxing. So they want a sub. And we poked a little bit at DAZN to go up $20 a month, which had them at the highest rate, for a casual fan, because we know, like you and I and people that listen to the show, we're going to pay the hundo and get the $833, and we're going to be happy about it.
Right.
But even if you pay the $300, you're looking at like $25 a month still. So $29.99 a month, if you did 6 pay-per-views, you're still paying $60 for the pay-per-view. Like, they're still getting your money. So maybe you save $10 by doing the yearly subscription. But because they've now jumped it, and another thing you don't see from the usual suspects, John, talking about a $10, you know, I don't see boxing Twitter full of polls. Are you going to buy the pay-per-view now that it's not 50 and it's 60? I don't see those polls right now, unless they're done in, like, sarcasm, which I have seen one of them was pretty funny or whatever. But $30 a month to sub, you know, for boxing and the entertainment, I understand, like, 3 songs from Doja Cat and Bieber and this type of whatever.
Right.
That's there, so
right.
You can watch it. But it goes back to that you're already paying for unlimited music. Most people want to see, you know, live of like live music live, $30 a month. If they did 6 pay-per-views, so we're going to pay, and even to do a 25 a month, we're going to pay $300 straight up when they don't even have an announced next pay-per-view. And the ones that they talk about are Oscar De La Hoya and then a Holyfield pay-per-view, both of them exhibitions. What is this, just a money grab? Let's try to get up as much upfront money as we can get, because now they're also talking about the music's not going to slow down the card. Well, when the hell are they going to play then? When are they going to perform, I should say? Where are we going to fit in Meek Mill? Is that later? Is that after the fight? This is just completely opposite from what they started, like you mentioned, and it was supposed to draw the youth. And now they're just putting in a standard HBO mediocre card from 2006 when they had 12 pay-per-views a year, and this has just got that feeling. I mean, what the – $30 a month, John?
I agree, Chris. You go back when boxing, you know, I think they're rebounding from some of that now. When it got off track, it was like during that time, like you're saying, like you know, mid-2000s when HBO just started running too many pay-per-views and then the regular HBO fights were getting too mediocre. I mean, you know, that's not your model. Like when they bring in Jim Lampley and then you got Kambosos, you know, to me, again, we're going to find out who's right, who's wrong. But to me, a bad alphabet mandatory challenger, even though he might be better than some of them, still a bad one to me. You know, and then you're going to make that pay-per-view. And then, yeah, like, again, like even the last one, I mean, you do have to talk part about the entertainment music value. I mean, with some of the other wacky stuff they had in that was entertaining, and you had Doja Cat and Bieber in there and, you know, Saucy and, you know, some popular current acts.
Slap boxing, little slap boxing too, the slapping the face competition.
Yeah, I mean, and then, you know, this, I just don't know what they're doing with this. And, you know, you make a good point. You know, I was real critical of DAZN and what they're trying to do, and I still don't think they're getting really good exposure for the fighters, but where they toned down my criticism a bit is just what you said. You know, the $100 for the hardcore fan, and they have, to their credit, they have stayed with it. I thought they'd drop it, but they haven't. So I got to give them that. I mean, it's not bad, $8.33 a month, you know, because I think you do have to start talking subscriptions. I mean, I've got, like, you know, SiriusXM. I've got, you know, Apple Music. Then, you know, you got DAZN. You got ESPN Plus. I mean, you know, we're all going to have a limit. I mean, how many of these things are we supposed to subscribe to? I mean, what's Triller giving me? I mean, you know, I got Apple, right? I got Apple Music, and it's got to, you know, it's got to be something that gets you entertained enough. I mean, you know, Lopez Kambosos, and then other fights that are not close odds wise. You know, and you got a bunch of other boxing on the same day. I mean, you know, I don't even think it wouldn't work anyway. But like, if they
these
were
aren't
only
exhibitions,
going,
right? These aren't exhibitions with names, right?
Right. They're not exhibitions with names, and I don't like the exhibitions. See, you and I both agree on that. I mean, some people don't care.
Right.
I don't like the exhibitions. So, I mean, that's the thing. This is just me talking. I mean, you know, Jake Paul and Aspen wasn't an exhibition. Now, some people don't want that, but to me, okay, it's a fight. Just like we talked last week when Woodley fights Jake Paul. I mean, again, everybody's got their own taste. I'm a hardcore fan and follower and commentator, but I'll still, if something draws me entertainment value, I'll still get
right.
It. You know, I just, the Mayweather-Logan Paul for me was just, and you agreed on that, you know, exhibition. That's what just kind of, you know, if it was a, I mean, again, some people will feel the exact opposite, but for me, if it was a real fight and I had to see how Floyd Mayweather was going to navigate this big guy in a real fight, I might buy that. It's not
right,
just
and we knew he was training every day. You know, he told us he's taking breaks in his training not to get hurt.
Right.
I mean, you know.
Right. Yeah, just to see what he would do. You know, see what he would do. I mean, me personally, sometimes that just that unique aspect where it's strange enough that it has an attraction, and sometimes that's can be the good part about boxing when it's not regulated and you can have these odd things happen. But I just don't see what Saturday night on Triller, what that does, even though I like Lopez, you know, I like Hunter, I like Conwell, but just, again, they're not like, it's not like they've put out all this money to have these like even money fights with big names. So you just see things like this and I don't get what they're trying to do here.
Yeah, man. And there's also from Guadalajara, an integrated sports bet. This is supposed to be an integrated sports $29.99 pay-per-view is what it's supposed to be, John, this Triller thing from Puerto Rico or something, or from Panama maybe, or Honduras or something like that, where it's like, okay, bring, you know, is he from Panama? Is that where Teofimo's originally, his heritage comes from? Am I wrong with that, or is it Honduras?
He's American with the Honduran heritage.
Honduran. Okay. All
right. Yeah.
So I bring
but
up
he did,
integrated
he did
sports. Out, go ahead.
Yeah, he did win the Olympic trials, U.S. Olympic trials, and then changed from the old way they used to do it. He didn't get the Olympic spot, so that's why he fought for Honduras.
Right.
He actually won the U.S. trials, but they gave it to Balderas because he had fought in the WSB. So, but his dad, I guess, the heritage is Honduran.
Okay. So that kind of makes – I bring up the integrated sports pay-per-view because Julio Cesar Chavez Sr. and Hector Camacho Jr. in a six-round exhibition, Chavez Jr. taking on Anderson Silva in an eight-rounder, which is crazy that no one's even talking about that, mostly off of Chavez Jr.'s last couple of fights. So that's that, another exhibition on pay-per-view, which I think is cheaper or whatever. But then we have Inoue returning, and, you know, Michaela Mayer in a fight there that could be interesting. Adam Lopez and Isaac Dogbo in the long run doesn't do much for us. But it is kind of a crossroads fight, so I think, oh, that could be entertaining. I'm cool with that. But, you know, the main event, you know, Inoue is going to blow this dude away. Not much with this ESPN, but any comments on the ESPN before we get to the Showtime one as well?
Yeah, since everybody's competing here, and you know, when they come up, like you mentioned earlier, Chris, I mean, people tend to forget this. You know, when they all do come on the same date like that, a lot of times they pretend it's accidental, but it's really not. In other words, let's face it, they are competitors. In other words, and as fans, we'd like to see them not conflict. But in their minds, they don't like to admit this straight out. But, you know, they're saying, okay, I think I can beat the competitor's product this night, you know, based on what platform I'm on or who I've got fighting or whatever the case may be. So, you know, it's really not accidental. So why I mention that is, you know, that's where then, you know, Top Rank comes in with a show and it's on basic cable, you know, so that always gives you an advantage, you know, because you've even got more subscribers than Showtime. You've got many more than DAZN subscriptions, and you've certainly got a big edge on a Triller, you know, pay-per-view. So ESPN, again, knowing what their competition is going to be, thinking, well, you know, with what we're going to spend on what we put out there, we think we're going to draw more people than who we're up against. And, you know, odds are good that they're going to be able – and actually they will do that. I mean, just – and that's the thing with competition. So, you know, Top Rank and ESPN are saying, you know, we're going to throw this out there. This is not our best stuff, but we're going to it's going to be on basic cable, and we're going to outdraw everybody else. So, you know, they know what they're doing there. You know, Inoue is in with a no-hoper. I don't like that. I mean – you know, I think, you know, and you get these fans and especially these hipster types. And look, I'm a believer in Inoue's talent. And his victory over Dener just aged better with Dener's performance. But with all that understood, some of his opposition, frankly, has been overrated. And, you know, it's been moving around in the weight classes some. Yeah. And a lot of that then is because of the WBSS stuff. You know, you've got people who are fans of that who think just if somebody was in that, that means automatically, you know, every fight was brutal competition. And, you know, even if the guy had an alphabet belt or something like that, that's not, you know, it's not always it's not always the case. So, you know, I mean, why I'm just saying all that is this is not a good opponent here. You know, he's coming off an easy KO over Maloney. I mean, you know, Maloney's okay. I mean, you know, he's not bad. He's not, you know, even though he's ranked in the division. So, you know, would like to see him and like to see him in something better. This shouldn't be any problem. You know, it's interesting you mentioned Lopez and Dogbe because when you really go through all this quantity we have, I'll put my money on in terms of competitiveness. That's probably the best fight of the day.
I'd agree with that.
That's on paper anyway. Right, and you know, I like watching Michaela Mayer fight. I mean, I think she really can fight. I think we're way past the time of getting rid of this 2-minute rounds for the women. You know, I think that's discriminatory and it's sexist. There's just no rational basis for it. It's got to go. So I hate that when, you know, we are getting women in some headlining positions or co-feature positions, but, you know, ESPN's good exposure. You know, let's have 3-minute rounds. I mean, let's stop this nonsense. You know, we're in the United States of America here. I mean, it just shouldn't be happening. I mean, we know better than that. It shouldn't be happening. So, you know, wouldn't have me not enjoy watching Michaela Mayer fight because I like her abilities. I think she's got talent and she's a good story, but we need to get rid of those 2-minute rounds. So out of those three fights, I like watching Inoue. I like watching Michaela Mayer, but you know, you don't have the opponents there in those two fights. The Dogbe Lopez fight is a real good one. You know, Lopez is trained by Buddy McGirt too. He's always got a good game plan, has his fighters ready. I like seeing what he does. I mean, I think that's a real good fight, and I think that's a fight that fighting at his best has got a chance to pull that one off. So I do like that fight on that card.
That's a good way to open up the broadcast. It might be able to keep some viewership that way too. DAZN, Munguia is taking on a guy that Golovkin waxed not long ago, Gabriel Rosado, who looked good against Danny Jacobs, relatively speaking anyway, is taking on a prospect. There are some other prospects, Blair Cobson, Brad Solomon and such. What do you take out of that card?
You know, I've been a fan of Munguia more than a lot of people. You know, as he's been in the spotlight more, a lot more people seem down on him than high on him. I basically liked him. You know, I don't like to have these too much, but I think on this one I'm going to say, you know, Sheremeta looked so bad against Golovkin, even though, you know, I mean, Golovkin's power has always been for real, even if you look at the stats of his fights, you know, even disregarding who some of his opposition was at times, you know, the number of fights that he scored knockouts or knock career, that's legit, and it shows you what kind of a chin Canelo has, too, which Canelo, as good as he is, and he gets credit for it. The guy actually doesn't even get enough credit for his chin because, you know, he then went 24 with Golovkin and didn't even go down. But why I mention that is, you know, Sheremeta was in trouble against Golovkin like every moment. And, you know, I don't even know how he lasted as long as he did, but he was awful in that fight. So, you know, from the way it appeared. So what I'm getting to here is, you know, Munguia is a younger guy than Golovkin, but he is also a power puncher. This would be one of those fights to me, like, you know, you don't like this to be why you're watching a fight. You want a competitive fight. But the thing that I'm just a hair curious about in this one is, you know, Munguia being a young guy who's also a power puncher, you know, from what we saw Sheremeta against Golovkin, the statement to make here would be to just run this guy out of there in a round or two. I would hope that he realized, and the guy's coming in on short notice too. So no reason really, if Munguia is what I think he is and can be, which is probably more than most, you know, I've been a little higher on him than most, but I've learned too, in my older age, you've got to adjust what you see. You've got to adjust on what you actually see. So I guess what I'm saying here is, you know, if Sheremeta, you know, goes, you know, 12 rounds with Munguia or goes late in the fight or is real competitive after getting annihilated by a 39-year-old Golovkin, I mean, You know, that's not good for Munguia. On the other side of the coin, if Munguia runs this guy out of there in a round or two, which I think he should, you know, then at least he's starting to make a statement like, hey, the torch is passing here. You know, I'm ready for Golovkin. You know, because DAZN could easily make that fight. I mean, you know, I only assume with Golovkin, because I think it's been somewhat of the pattern that, you know, he and business-wise, you can't blame him. I mean, the payday is with Canelo. So even
right.
if it's at 168 pounds and he's 40 years old, you know, that's the final payday. So, I mean, if Munguia is even too much of a risk at this point that they don't want to take waiting on Canelo, it's not going to happen. Because I just look at that fight and it's like, well, you know, they're both middleweights. They're both DAZN. You know, we're waiting, you know, Golovkin just fought Sharameta. Munguia is fighting Sharameta. The guy was not impressive. I mean, let's get that on or something. But I think all I can try to take out of this one is, again, you know, can Munguia make a statement against Sharameta that maybe trumps Golovkin, since they're fighting the guy back to back. And it's on the other side of the coin. It's if he has trouble with this guy and it's competitive, or Sharameta takes him the distance, then I've got to myself start looking at Munguia and saying, you know, maybe this guy just isn't as good as I thought he was.
And I will say he has improved. There's no doubt about that. We'll see where it – and another thing is, it was going to be Sulecki, which would have been an upgrade in an opponent, especially where Munguia is and who he's faced at middleweight. I think that would have been a better fight. But, you know, it is what it is. Moving on to the Showtime card, Jermall Charlo faces power-punching Montiel. Speaking of Munguia, a lot of people are not happy with this fight either, like a lot of these main events, because Munguia stopped Montiel like in the second or third round a while back. Now, we should preference it. That was at welterweight, and clearly Montiel didn't belong at that weight, and he's, you know, looked better since there. Like a lot of these fights in the main event, I'm hoping this is just a fun little exchange and then a knockout. So at least, you know, the one thing I'll say is Montiel's going in there with something, you know, to accomplish or whatever. He does have power, but still, you know, it is a mismatch. And then Isaac Cruz and Francisco Vargas, who I thought should have been retired a while ago. I know he's had some time off. He hasn't been in as many wars lately, but still, you know, Angelo Leo coming off his first loss over Aaron Almeida, who, you know, is actually a pretty good, that's a decent fight. And then I think they just added Michael Angeletti, a four-rounder. So I think it's going to be a quadruple header, if I'm not mistaken, but it's just a four-rounder against Luis Javier Valdez. What do you think about the Showtime card? What do you think about Montiel? Because it's of late, it looks like it may be a fun action fight than a knockout, but a lot of people are pointing to that Munguia knockout.
Yeah, here's the thing. You know, you don't want to seem to be overhyping something or being unrealistic about it. So you have to say, you know, when the fight was signed on paper for anybody looking at it, and you look, the odds makers know what they're doing. I mean, it's a mismatch according to the odds makers, and they're the best independent authority on that because their money's on the line. They can't let the biases take over. They've got to call it like it is. So I always look at that to set myself right. Peers are saying it's a mismatch. So with that understood, though, I've liked the way Montiel was looking because he's got size and he's got power. And normally, when you're taking a guy on as just an opponent or kind of a no-hoper or, you know, staying busy, as people call it nowadays, usually, you know, most matchmakers, when they're protecting the A-side guy, don't want somebody with power in there. Because, you know, boxing is the one sport where the guy lands something, he's got power, it changes. It doesn't matter if he's losing the fight. You know, it doesn't matter if he's been in trouble. He can win the fight with one shot or one shot that leads to, you know, a barrage and then a stoppage. So Montiel's got size and power, and I like the way he's been looking. You know, Centeno, even though Jermall Charlo did blow him out, he's a competent fighter, you know, had talent, a bit of a disappointment, but the guy has some skills. You know, Montiel had a draw with him. You know, we know it was a washed-up James Kirkland who had been off, but still one round, he got him out of there. I mean, he had him hurt as soon as he hit him. I mean, even something that worked out like that, you know, there's still something impressive because the odds makers did have that fight. I believe Kirkland was a slight favorite in that fight.
Yeah, he was slight.
So,
slight, if I remember correctly.
He's slight favorite. Yeah, right. So, you know, yeah, we know how it came out, but, you know, and there were some people saying, hey, you got to watch for Montiel pulling the upset on Kirkland here. I got to give them credit because there were a few people saying it pre-fight. But still, Kirkland was a slight favorite. Montiel just blasted him out of there. He's got the Munguia loss, you know, like you're saying, and a lot of people are saying, but he's a young guy too. And that's the other thing. I think when A sides are matched up more dangerously, I look at, you know, for the potential for danger, I look at things that Montiel has: size, power, and youth. Because if a guy's older and washed up or past his best, the chances at the upset are lower too. But a guy who can still improve, who could still be getting better, who still has youth on his side, you know, are more dangerous to me. So, and you've seen some of those types of upsets on some of those matchroom cards with, you know, some of the opponents Eddie Hearns brought over there. They fit that criteria. And, you know, Montiel's Mexican, but I'm not even just saying because they're Mexican. You just saw it with Ponce against Ritson that you were talking about earlier. You know, you got a younger guy who's got some size for the weight class, some pop, and those are some guys with some upset potential. And Montiel fits that. Now,
so John just dropped. He's got time to call back. I'm sure he's going to pop back in here. He's kind of been in and out. You guys kind of notice he's been a little in and out in his reception, so I'm sure he'll pop back in here real quick because I don't think he was in a car or anything like that, so I don't think he's in an area where it just, you know, blocked him. So there we go. I see him pop in. All right, let's bring him back in. Go ahead, John.
I think I lost you for a second.
I hit something.
You lost you for a second, but where I was left off, we just wrap up that thought, was, you know, Jermall Charlo, I think, is an underrated fighter. I mean, he's got power. He's got skill. He always seems to be well-prepared for his fights. Nothing has indicated anything to the contrary that we've seen in the past. So you would think that him being well-prepared and then with his level of experience and talent, that he'll have too much for Montiel. But again, Montiel's bringing power. He's bringing youth. He's bringing size. So as far as opponents go, it doesn't mean I was saying that's who I wanted for Jermall Charlo, but I don't think it's rationalizing for Showtime or PBC to say if it's going to be an opponent type, at least it's an opponent type that's a little more interesting.
Yeah, I think so. And you know, this fight coming off of, you know, if you've come off a solid performance and a solid fight like Jermall has against Derevchenko, didn't knock him down but beat him cleaner than a lot of these other guys did. I'm willing to, okay, get him in the ring. If you look at who Benavidez is fighting, who seems to be faded now, not Benavidez but his opponent, maybe there's a collision course there. Daniel Jacobs was talking about going back to 60 and taking on Charlo. So it does kind of feel like they're ramping him up, bigger fight later in the year. So let's hope that's the case, you know, when it comes to that. Any other items before we start to maybe talk about, you know, what these four kings meant to us? I definitely want to hear your take on this segment in general. But anything else stand out to you for the weekend or anything else like that?
Yeah, I just think one thing I wanted to touch on, because I haven't got a chance to touch on it yet, and, you know, admittedly, a guy, one of my favorite fighters to watch, and I think he, if you looked at his whole career, had more all-around talent than people gave him credit for, but just had, you know, really a bad loss, Jarrett Hurd. You know, hate to see it, but, you know, as I was saying a little bit before, the more I watch boxing and, frankly, just all things in life, you know, I like to study the science of predicting and having, you know, good opinions, which all of us are wrong at times and we can be right. And, you know, if you're right more than wrong, you're actually doing pretty good. But why I'm getting to that is, you know, you can stick with one opinion for a long time, and every once in a while you're going to be spectacularly right because you stuck with it and nobody else was saying it. But if you rigidly stick to it, also going to be wrong a ton. So what you learn as you get older, and people that get better at predicting things, is you kind of got to, you know, it may seem like common sense, but a lot of times we don't do it. You get in biases. Like I said, you get stubborn, you get denial. You got to adjust on what you see. And what I'm just saying is, been real high on Jarrett Hurd. Don't think I was wrong about that, but what I think I have to adjust on what I see is, you know, that fight with, you know, J-Rock Williams was a war. He had a, you know, as some people have pointed out, which is true too, his fight with Lara before that was the fight of the year. Lara's got underrated pop, you know, when he's landing on, you know, and really wants to set on his punches. Looks to me now, after that Arias fight, and you had the Julian Williams fight, and he didn't look good against Santana, who was pretty much a washed-up guy. Looks like at age 30, Jarrett Hurd might be on the wrong side of the hill at this point. I think that would make sense. And what it made me then reevaluate as well is that war between Julian Williams and Jarrett Hurd was such a war. To me, that was fight of the year. I personally thought that was a better fight than, in a way, Donaire. Say what you will, but I thought it at the time. I still think it. I think those guys, you know, Williams getting blown away by Rosario after that, those guys might have taken a lot out of each other in that fight. And we'll see. Julian Williams has got a fight against a lesser opponent coming up. But you know, maybe you don't hope it for him, but maybe we'll have to look at that fight and just see if he looks a little faded as well. But it looks like maybe when you have a war like that, maybe that's the best of those two guys in the past at this point.
Yeah, definitely. It does feel like that. You know, maybe it is the stuck between styles thing, because you see this guy off the rope and you're just like, what are you doing, dude? Like, are you hurt?
Yeah.
Otherwise, get off the rope and stop trying to counter. You know, I don't want to see any shoulder roll, nothing like that, you know. So I think that might, who knows, maybe the weight at one, well, this was a higher weight, so he should have felt
right.
Better, but it does kind of, I don't know, man, it does kind of feel like, you know, that it just, he's either past it or he's between styles or a combination of both. Who knows. So, this four-episode, The Kings, which obviously had to do with the four Kings, Hagler, Leonard, Hearns, and Duran, starting late 70s, going all the way through the 80s. You know, it's been really well done. We're not going to break down episode by episode, but it does kind of get into all of their beginnings, how Sugar Ray Leonard was kind of like, you know, the gold medalist the guy doing the kid at that time, really the young man doing those 7-Up commercials, and just, you know, the gold boy before gold boy, right? And then Hagler, you know, grinding his way to the top. You had in the 70s Duran just going off as a lightweight. You had Hearns coming up as well, knocking people, you know, out left and right. In that they actually showed that Aaron Pryor trial loss for the Olympic bouts, and they mixed in the Reagan era, Panama, the Panama Canal, all sorts of stuff when it comes to that. I mean, the amount of people that were at that Panamanian airport when he came back after that Leonard fight was just phenomenal, But there was a lot of good stuff in it. From a variety, you know, from the fighters, from layers of managers and trainers and broadcasters, and I just thought it was really, really well done. It's definitely worth a stream. There's four episodes, and if you have Showtime, you can just watch them anytime you want. I think the third episode's coming this week or this weekend. Yeah. So, you know, it was awesome. And it obviously, you know, it went through all the different fights, obviously all the matchmaking and how, you know, it looked like Hearns was done. Then he came back against Leonard. It looked like Duran was done. And, you know, it definitely showed Duran as the bad boy role. And, you know, it also highlighted something, you know, at one point Ali, and I knew there was a drought, but I had forgotten that Ali was like the only U.S. titleist. I can't remember what year it was. It was 1970. I can't remember what year they said. So it was factual. It was interesting. It was in-depth. And it just ran the gamut all the way to, you know, of course, Leonard and Hagler and Leonard and Tommy again and whatnot. And just kind of going through that, Leonard and Duran, which, you know, the last one was a really slow fight. But I know you didn't see all the episodes or see the documentary fully just yet. So like I said, we don't have to break down. A lot of people are going to watch it. But it's in-depth. It's good. It's funny. It's both telling. It's a lot of things. There's also a lot of times where money does, it turns out, John, money does play a role in being a free agent or signing a short deal just to make certain fights do play a role in boxing, even in the prime era, like the 80s, like that, to hear a lot of times Leonard saying, when the money's right, I'll fight him and all that, and how that's sacrilegious to say now, but we know that's, at the end of the day, if Spence and Crawford could do $1.5 million on pay-per-view, they would have already, they'd probably be looking at a rematch by now. But overall, you know, if you've seen any of the episodes, feel free to talk about it, but just in general, having lived through it as a boxing fan, I would love your take just in general on this subject with the Four Kings and the hell of a run they had that helped, you know, kind of bridge that Ali gap. And then obviously they even mentioned it on the last episode about how they set the tone, made it even more popular. Every fight that they had almost, or a lot of them, were record-breaking purses and all that. And then Tyson came along and took that thing and ran. But your thoughts in just in general of the era as well.
You know, I think that they made a good point that I had kind of forgotten as well, that you mentioned that there was a little bit of a U.S. drought of titleists. And, you know, Ali, of course, being the most popular athlete in the world at that time and being the heavyweight champion of the world and, you know, starting to near the end of his run, that was when boxing then hit. I always called it a new golden era, and you do hear of that, it referred to that a lot of times.
Yeah.
Which really, you know, you do start, you do kind of look at that with the Duran Leonard one, you know, being around, not exactly that being the date, but around the start of it, and then really carrying through until it was really short-lived. I mean, there were other big moments, but I think you were on the other side of the hill already even though some of these great fights that, you know, you mentioned even involving these fighters, and of course, you know, like Hagler-Hearns was a great fight in 85, but you were already on the downside of that slope, I think, as you got into 83. And, you know, you had the tragedy of the, you know, Ray Mancini and Dooku Kim in November
right.
82 on national TV on CBS. Then the silly, because it had nothing to do with it, the silly decision of the WBC to, at the end of 1982, cut their fights to 12 rounds. And then, you know, what I like to throw into it that people don't talk about enough, because you still had a lot of great fights involving it, but it did water things down, is, you know, that's also right around that time as you're getting to the end of the second golden era of about, you know, 3 years or so, but such a great, you know, 3 years, and boxing being extremely popular and all over network TV, is, you know, then you started having these junior weight classes that even when they were around, you know, really the general boxing public didn't care about or pay much attention to. They started getting into the mix. You know, you already had, you know, one thing that is revisionist history is, you know, fans that lived through the era and old school fans, they were not happy with two champions. I mean, you know, that's like a myth I hear now, and it applies to all these types of
right.
things too. Like, nobody was happy. I mean, that's bull when you hear that now. You know, oh, there was only two champs. It was great. Yeah, sure, it was better than four champs or more, but nobody was happy with two champs. Don't let anybody sell you on that who lived through that era. Nobody was happy with two champs back then. So, but I think the way I look at the Four Kings thing is it became kind of almost a marketing thing to tie things together, really a little bit towards casual type fans, even though these are some of the greatest fighters of all time, without any doubt about it. Absolute legends. But I mean, like, why I say that is, like, you know, Duran, he had already had his run at lightweight. I mean, Duran had already secured his place as one of the greatest lightweights of all time before he even fought Sugar Ray Leonard the first time. You know, he was 71-1. You know, which is amazing. And he was literally feared. I mean, he was a guy that, you know, when I saw him as a kid, when I was watching him, the guy literally scared me as a kid watching him on TV because the way on network TV, because he looked like he was trying to kill people. I mean, here was this guy, you know, with this goatee and this dark black hair flying around and who was skilled and powerful, but he looked like he was trying to kill people out there. And, you know, so Duran, he had already done all that before he fought Leonard for the first time in June of 1980. These are the things I think you have to clarify a little, where it's fun because all those fights in the era to tie these four together, but you have to make the distinctions, I think, if you're looking at them fairly and really evaluating the era. So, like, Duran was already one of the greatest lightweights of all time before he fought Leonard. You know, and that wasn't going to change. But then, you know, he affirmed his greatness. Of course, he beat Palomino, who was an excellent fighter at welterweight, before he fought Leonard. And, of course, Leonard was the Holy Grail payday because he was coming out of the Olympics and he was the golden boy of that time. And like you said, he was on the 7-Up commercial and, you know, Duran ended up being on the 7-Up commercial with him. But just saying that, you know, look, I think what people don't get today, and it really did matter, you know, with people not caring about those junior classes, Duran never bothered picking up a 140 belt because nobody cared. I mean, that's the way it was back then. In other words, you know, it was right. Leonard's got division that matters. You know, I'm the lightweight champ. I'm going up to the welterweight division and picking up that belt. You know, that's the way it was coming into that era. And I think that that's really important to look at. That's why, you know, it didn't matter. You know, it wasn't like alphabet belt collecting. Nobody cared about that. And, you know, I think to me it was almost like when I look at these, then what people are calling the Four Kings, as great as all these fights was and the era was, it was kind of like the best of the old era still around with some of the things these guys did. And then especially with Leonard, as great of a fighter as he was, like you started to – the downside, though, was you started to see a little bit of the permeating in of some of the things that got to be bad in the future, like the, you know, caring about junior alphabet belts. You know, remember Leonard insisted when he fought Hagler it was going to be 12 rounds. You know, title fights had always been 15. You know, Hagler was the lineal unified champion. He'd only fought in 15-round title fights. You know, as amazing as it was what Leonard did in that comeback, I mean, you know, again, you got to look at what era we were in and coming off of, you know, historically everything being 15 rounds, and Hagler had just, you know, to his complete credit, ruled with an iron fist, literally, as the unified middleweight champ. There was no debate. You know, you had to go through him. There was no 168 pounds at that point. Again, remember at that point, but then when you get into the tail end of the Three Kings era, you've got the Four Kings. You've got, you know, Leonard picking up newly created WBC, you know, 168-pound belt, and Hearns fighting for a
WBO.
Yeah,
fighting for two different belts at different – yeah, that's right. Yep, yep.
Right. You had – you know, again, you got to remember, because nobody cared. Now, you know, again, people confuse it. Like when Leonard fought Ayub Kalule and just took him out, you know, as a tune-up before he fought Hearns, again, people confuse it. They look at it was now. They say, oh, he fought the 154-pound belt holder. Yeah, he did. Nobody cared about that belt then. Okay? In other words, that's why it was a tune-up. So, you know, in other words, it was beneath guys like Leonard and Duran, you know, when they were entering that era. Now, of course, then they all started fighting, you know, for those belts, and Duran beat Davey Moore for a 154. But remember, when he'd lost to Benitez already at 154 pounds. So, you know, these were some of the greatest, like, you know, Duran's certainly one of the top lightweights of all time. Leonard is one of the top 10 welterweights of all time. Those two guys are both, you know, I think Duran's in the top 10 fighters of all time. I think Leonard is probably around 10, 11. That would be, I think historians go with that. I agree with that. You know, Hagler, one of the top 10 middleweights of all time, you know, and Tommy Hearns, who really was one of my favorite fighters of all time. To me, he's like the guy who he's right up there with anybody of all time in terms of, you know, the guy went three traditional weight classes, you know, welterweight, middleweight, light heavyweight, and covered them fighting at the top of those divisions. So, you know, that's all time.
Very underrated skills, yep, too, as we found out in that first Leonard fight, too, when he was outboxing Leonard.
Without a doubt. You know, Tommy Hearns did not have great power as an amateur. You know, he was always thin, but then his upper body got bigger when he was a pro, even though he was a very young guy. And it's amazing that with the guys coming up, you know, that young, I think what was Hearns 22 when he fought Leonard the first time. I mean, it's amazing what these guys had accomplished already. But, you know, to me, as great as Tommy Hearns was, because again, this was an era where you still had some of that great stuff from the older eras where, you know, you're looking at one real champ of division, even though there was two sanctioning bodies, but, you know, the public looking to more of that. Like, in other words, you know, Leonard, to his credit, you know, he beat Tommy Hearns. I mean, that was for the welterweight championship of the world. You know, when he beat Marvin Hagler, it's a shame it was 12 rounds, but it was an amazing comeback, controversial decision. I thought Hagler could have gotten the win, but Leonard got it. That was for the middleweight champion of the world. In other words, you know, he's picking up the belts in those two divisions against one guy. He is the guy, the champ. Duran was the lightweight champion of the world. Then he beat Leonard in as good of a fight as anybody's ever had. You know, maybe Joe Frazier in his, you know, first fight with Ali, that type of a performance. He becomes the welterweight champion of the world, you know. I mean, and then later on, of course, he beats a guy at middleweight, Barkley, who had knocked out Tommy Hearns. You know, these are where you're getting into those old school, extraordinary type accomplishments, you know, and then, of course, the great fights they all had with each other. But to me, it's like they personify the best of all the old era and what was great of boxing. And then you get a little bit of some of the stuff creeping in, especially later on, that actually became some of the things that were unpleasant about modern boxing, you know, modern present day boxing, things that crept in. So I find that kind of interesting too. It was all in a relatively short period of time, but these guys, you know, some of the greatest old school type accomplishments and fighting each other, which you wish you would see more of today. But then later on, some of the things, you know, really being spearheaded by Leonard, that kind of were some of the things that became problems in boxing later on that were starting to rear their head.
Right, and I do like how you put it, how it wasn't like 79 to 89, which kind of marks the end of that run within them guys fighting each other. Obviously, the third fight, and they even said it in the doc. They're like, yeah, just you could just, you know, turn that puppy off. There's not much to watch in that fight with Duran and Leonard, the third one. But, you know, in like over a 10-year span, when you look back at it, it's not a 10-year span. And I'm glad that you pointed that out in that 83-ish whatever date, that 4 or 5 years of it where it was boom, boom, boom. You're right. That was actually, I mean, you had Durant, fighter of the decade in the 70s. Like, whatever he did with cherry on top, and look at what he did with that cherry on top, but it did take, like, from 79 to 86, because 86 is when Leonard and Hearns fought. And even that second Hearns and Leonard fight, which obviously Leonard, not post-fight, but not that long after, and years after that, I always said, you know, that drop was bullshit. I did lose that fight. He admitted it, stuff like that. But you could see them fading in that time, and they were not in their primes anymore. And sometimes, I mean, thank God, John, there's no boxing Twitter back then, because, I mean, they would have said about Tommy Hearns and Durant should not be getting in the ring. I'm going to boycott the pay-per-view. Like, they would have just laid it on them. And don't get me wrong, people were saying that, too, like, the mainstream media and the sports media, too. Like, this is just, even when Leonard came back, is his eye, the detached retina, this is suicide. Why is he even doing this and all that? So it did take a long time. You know, we've seen the PBC welterweights mix it up. Thurman's injury or time off, a lot of people are in between on how long he was out for what reasons or whatever, but that kind of screwed up them all fighting each other, obviously, and I'm definitely not comparing, you know, eras or anything like that, but you're right. It really was more of a 4 or 5 when they're in their prime, ready to go, and they fought each other and all that, and then it did kind of lend itself to what happens in boxing. Some guy gets his ass kicked because he wasn't training properly. Then all of a sudden he got re-motivated. That's what they said, you know, with Duran and Hearns. And same with Leonard when he was out of the limelight, how in the back of his head he's like, you know, screw this. And after that Duran fight, and I remember this exactly, you know, after Duran said, hey, dude, you box this dude, you can beat Hagler, you know, Hagler, because I barely, you know, I almost beat him myself, and I'm washed, you know. So it was just the documentary itself, just to clear that up or clean that up, tie that up with a bow, was damn good. And you're right, I'm glad that you put a little bit more clarity to that. Because the Le Mans, you're right, there is some fights down the stretch. I still remember watching the replay of Leonard's last fight on Tuesday Night Fights on USA. I was at my girlfriend's house, and because she had cable, and I watched the first couple rounds like, yeah, this is exactly what I thought it'd be. Turn it, but of course, I'm a Leonard fan, so I had to turn it back, see some more. Oh, I don't want to see it. You know, it was... Those last two fights were tough to watch, no doubt about it, with Camacho and then obviously Norris. But overall, though, the ups and downs all these guys took, a lot of the Hagler stuff was early in his career as far as ups and downs. Then it was just sky high, and he got popular. Everyone kind of got their popularity after a while, and that's why everybody kind of adored and loved everyone. Another thing I will say, John, I'm really glad that you put – the controversial Leonard Hagler in its right frame. You can say, I think Hagler could have done enough. I think Leonard, whatever. But this whole thing, and it still lingers today, John, like Hagler like had 10 rounds on him. And I'm a Leonard fan. That's my favorite fight of all time. So I'm putting it on the table. I'm biased, but there's no way you can watch that fight, especially coming out orthodox, trying to have a chess match with a chess match, you know, king. That was just a stupid way to start the fight anyway, RIP Hagler. But this whole thing about Hagler got completely robbed, I just don't see that. Rob, did you see the fight? Like, you can say Hagler won. That's cool. I'm not going to argue that. It was a competitive fight, but to sit there and say he was robbed, he was done for, it was easy to score to Hagler, to me that just showed a lot more biasness that was back then, where a lot of people either loved or hated Leonard in a sense too, because of that pretty boy image.
Yeah, I think, you know, you make a good point there, Chris, in the sense that, I mean, I thought Hagler did enough to win it, but, you know, my late father, who, you know, has as much boxing knowledge as anybody I knew, I mean, he thought, you know, I remember, you know, the night of the fight, you know, he thought that, you know, really that Leonard did enough, you know, he could have gotten it, you know, it could have gotten either way, but, you know, he wasn't looking at it as a robbery. And, you know, you do remind me, I think I should add also to clarify in my perspective on things, which I think fits a little bit what I was talking about. Now, you know, Duran, he had made his mark at lightweight. You know, Hagler had made his mark separately at middleweight and in that kind of golden era I was talking about, you know, like eight, you know, he destroyed Minter in 80. You know, he'd been denied a title shot for a long time. And then, you know, a lot of people thought he beat Antifermo. I thought he let his foot off the gas a little too much and,
he did,
you know, maybe
he did, yep.
Let Antifermo escape with that draw. But a lot of people thought Hagler should have gotten the nod. And, you know, he came back with that vengeance. You know, he didn't give up. He got the shot for the second time against Minter. And Minter is a very good fighter. And it was over, you know, in London. And Hagler just obliterated him. But what I'm saying is, like, that was Marvin Hagler was kind of marching. He wasn't as popular, but he was on his march towards popularity. And I can say for certain, you know, before, like, Roberto Duran got in with him in 83, I mean, again, middleweights had nowhere to go. Hagler was the champ. A tough guy like Mustafa Hamsho, he had to try to go through Hagler twice. I mean, that's the kind of way it should be. It's, you know, tough,
right.
Tough to win a title, tough to be the guy, not – you run around, you get another alphabet belt, or you have a 168-pound class that nobody needs. I mean, that didn't exist yet. So Hagler was just you know, literally knocking out all his challengers after picking up the title in 80 through 83, did not have the name opponent. I mean, that's what he was missing. You know, you got to get that perspective back, too. He was the middleweight guy. These guys were not
middleweight.
And that's
why people, you know, loved him in the end, too. Because he had to work for it, you know?
He had to really work for it. And then Duran was his first chance at a name, and then Duran performed extremely well and was the first title challenger to go the distance with Hagler. Then later on, of course, in 85, he had the memorable war with Hearns, you know, one of the greatest rounds, if not the greatest round of all time. You know, then he got Leonard in 87. So, in other words, it's kind of like in a different – for different reasons than Duran, but Hagler was a guy, you know, he of course, was the middleweight, the bigger guy, but he'd made his mark. He'd already run through all his challengers. It was later on in his career that then he got the shot at these bigger, you know, name guys. And, you know, he had to – of course, you know, he got the win over Duran. Then he got the knockout win over Hearns. And, you know, I think we can tie it into the modern. And, Chris, I've always sensed this is something, you know, you agree with me on. And believe me, I'm not trying to overly bust on the guy. I complimented earlier in the show, you know, about his power. And I think the guy's got talent. But this is why when I see this art, this whining about,
yes,
you know, Gennady Golovkin, I don't have much tolerance for it, you know. I mean, Hagler had some tough setbacks. You know, he didn't get a title shot. Then, you know, he got the draw with Antifermo. There was only one champ per division. You know, he had to keep at it. Then he didn't get his bigger name guys till later on. You know, he got a win over Duran. He got the KO over Hearns. Controversial loss to Leonard. I mean, okay, so, you know, Golovkin, he had the draw with Canelo the first time. I thought the draw was fair. In other words, he didn't get it done. Then even though – I'm not saying it wasn't very close the second time it was, but lost the fight. He didn't get it done. I mean,
he didn't body,
you know,
punch either. How are you this killer?
You know,
he didn't even body punch. That just kind of opened up my eyes. You still owe Jacobs a rematch in my mind.
Yeah. And you know, he didn't, you know, and again, Canelo being, let's face it, by far the best fighter he's ever fought. We got to remember that, you know, by far the best.
Yeah.
People who don't like Canelo don't want to say that, who are Golovkin fans. And I think they make a mistake because it's actually would help their argument that, you know, in other words, if I'm one of these Golovkin fanatics, what they don't say that to me they should say is, hey, Canelo's a great fighter. He's number one pound for pound. My guy had a draw and a close loss to him. That's no shame, you know? But they don't
right.
they don't want to say that. They want to scream about conspiracies.
They just
want to
say 2-0. It was 2-0. Both fights were 10-2. It's like it was 1-1, dude.
Right. Both fights were 10-2. Now all of a sudden, I'm being sarcastic, but you have to say it. All of a sudden, why was it in Golovkin's two fights with Canelo that he all of a sudden wasn't permitted to win a fight by knockout?
Right.
I mean, you know, in other words, all of a sudden he can't score a knockout, and all those same Golovkin fanatics were not saying before the first Canelo Golovkin fight that, oh, it's going to be tight, it's a close one. It was Golovkin's going to kill him. He just needed to get this
right.
chance. He's going to kill him. He's winning by knockout. Well, then all of a sudden those predictions were forgotten. In other words, he wasn't too old then. It was
right.
he's going to knock
he
him
washed.
Out. Yeah.
Next thing you know, he's washed.
So, I'm just saying Marvin Hagler didn't need those excuses. You know, he persevered.
Right.
I mean, and that's why, like you said, people loved him with the work ethic and you know, the staying at it. I mean, you know, and I think he just retired after the Leonard fight, and I always agreed with that decision. I think he knew he was done. And frankly, I think he was done. Yeah, I think he was done.
Look at the other three guys and the punishment they took down the stretch of
right.
their careers, you know. It was a very smart idea.
I think he was done. And one thing I'll say, even though I think Hagler edged that fight, and heck,
yeah.
I was a little frustrated because I was feeling for Hagler in that fight, wanted to see him win. It was close. I thought he pulled it out, but I agree with what you're mm-hmm. saying, Chris, and like people, knowledgeable people like my dad said, you know, could have gone either way. But this I will say, and I don't think because I never really wanted to say it. I haven't said it to too many people, but – you know, I've watched that fight a million times, too, and even though I thought it should have been 15 rounds, when you look at how done Marvin Hagler was.
That's true.
Even though he
both
was doing,
of them were done.
Even
yeah.
though he was doing his best, to come on and Leonard was tired, I don't think the 15 rounds would have particularly helped him that night. You know, I just think that he was looking like he was really at the end of the line. And you know, it wasn't that Leonard was as fresh as a daisy, but – you know, you thought that going in, but I don't think when you watch those 12, you could say, well, it was going to be an automatic thing for Marvin Hagler if this thing had to go
sure.
another three rounds, because he was looking mighty, mighty gassed himself, and he was always in shape, but I just think he was at the end of the line.
You know, during this, I've heard, and I think it's blasphemy, and I don't say that much, but I've heard people say that the Hagler-Leonard fight was the second best fight of the series. And, of course, we all know, you know, Hagler-Hearns was the best fight, right? I think that's fair.
Right.
But I think people are sleeping on that Duran-Leonard first fight. To me, as far as two-way competitiveness, big shots landing, I'll take that from a watching standpoint, their first fight, Duran and Leonard, over Leonard and Hagler. And I don't think it's all that close, to be honest with you. Maybe I'm going over the top with the all that close comment, but I think it's a better, more entertaining fight. I'm not saying – I mean, I thought Duran won that one cleanly, cleaner, actually, than the outcome, you know, of the other one. But from an action standpoint, to see, especially then, to see Leonard on the ropes and him having to – I mean, he got clocked early, looked like he was going to get knocked down, super hurt. Recoup, but then he would do those shoe shine, turn them into power shots off the ropes too. To me, action-packed, and maybe because they threw more punches, it seemed like Hagler and Leonard was a slow build, you know? It was a slow build that got better, whereas pretty much from jump street, the Duran and Leonard's fight popped off pretty early.
Yeah, no, I totally agree with you there, Chris. I think, in all the series of fights between the four kings, you got to put Hagler-Hearns first, and then I think you put Leonard Duran one second. I mean, those and I think those two would stand out well above any of the other ones, really. You know, then you have other ones that are good, like, you know,
yeah, they
Hagler,
had plenty of
Leonard.
Drama. Leonard,
yeah,
had,
and you know,
it was a slow fight, but it was drama filled.
Yeah, and you know, Leonard-Hearns won. Is probably, I think that's going to come in before, you know, Hagler
yep.
and Leonard as well. But, you know, Hagler Leonard, you know, had some good moments. It was certainly memorable and exciting and you know, to be any good. And I didn't think it would be either. I got to say, full disclosure, I remember
yeah,
the day
I was
that
scared.
Fighting.
I was scared as a
you're,
I was definitely scared.
But I'm thinking of the Leonard Hearns, too. You brought out something that people have forgotten, and I remember that day well. Was in that 88 or 89? It was
I think it was 89.
Yeah, but you know, everybody thought Hearns was done, and I was a big Hearns fan. I was in disgust. I mean, I was actually one
right.
of those fans that you were referring to. I thought, Leonard's setting this up. But remember, this is that, even though that ended up being a very good fight and Hearns pulled the surprise, you know, again, that stuff was starting to creep in. Like Leonard was thinking Hearns was done. I mean, everybody
right.
was thinking that. And then he was having weight requirements for that fight. You know, this was stuff you weren't seeing up to that point. I mean, we know nowadays this is permeated in, but you know, when a belt or title was supposed to be on the line, you know, there was like, remember, you know, Leonard was set in certain weight restrictions and you know, this again, nowadays to people and younger fans, it seems like nothing, but I'm trying to give you the time perspective where these
yeah.
were, this was the later part of the Four Kings era. Like I said, unfortunately, these guys were all legitimately
great. And Leonard
great,
was the biggest, the money draw. So he could
right.
get away
and Leonard with it. Right, and Leonard was the money guy, and it was when you were really first starting to see some of the stuff come in that we don't like today. As great as Leonard was, and I don't dispute his greatness at all, like I said, he's probably, when historians are ranking him, he's probably around the 11th greatest fighter of all time. So, you know, you can't get much better than that, and I don't dispute
I think
that.
He was the best fighter out of those, but Duran had the best career.
Yeah, and that's a close one, right? Who was actually, you know, the best fighter, Leonard or Duran? Like I said, I think when we rank the careers, then, right, Duran comes slightly ahead. But there are historians even who would just flip him. It's close. But I think more right now, not that just means everything, but when you look at real legit historians,
yeah,
most of them give Duran a little bit of an edge there, but it's very close.
Yeah.
And you'll see good historians who have him flipped. But that's the way that kind of goes. I think Hearns is getting a bit underrated. And again, this to me would give you some perspective greatness on the Four Kings. And I don't think it's nostalgic. Like when somebody talks about like a Joe Calzaghe, like even being in the same league as a Hearns, to me, that's laughable. I mean,
right.
you know, Calzaghe's not close. I mean, it's not, to me, it's like not even like I literally would say that. I mean, they're on like different levels. So that's how great the guys, the Four Kings guys are as fighters, but they come from different spots. You know, Hagler at the heavy end of the chain and Duran at the light end of the chain, and then Leonard and Hearns the same, where they both came in as welterweights at the same time.
There you have it. I appreciate you taking an extended amount of time for the segment tonight, sir. Any final thoughts?
Let's see, I think we've covered up the only final thought, but yeah, you mentioned Cruz and Vargas. I like Isaac Cruz, didn't look as good in his last fight, but I think the guy he was in with was in for survival. We know Vargas doesn't do that, but I'm with you. I mean, guys can do what they want. It's their freedom. It's their health. But yeah, I really don't think Fernando Vargas should be in with I don't think Francisco Vargas should be in with Isaac Cruz at this point.
Yeah,
I'm
it's
curious,
like on the edge
yeah,
of your seat, but not for the normal reason, right? You know, like not because
exactly.
you're on the edge of the seat for a brawl, on the edge of the seat that the guy makes it out okay.
But for purely Isaac Cruz's perspective, I hope Isaac Cruz looks good because I do like him, and he's a young guy with
yeah.
power. Like I said, that's a good combination. I'm just trying to think. I think we've covered everything. It's good talking with you a long length of time. Like you said, Vallejo Almeida's not bad either. So hopefully this is going to be a day of boxing so full that we're going to get some good surprises out of it, but we're probably going to have to get some surprises.
All right, sir. You have yourself a good night. Enjoy the fights this weekend.
All right, Chris. Thanks for having me. Good talking with you.
Yes, sir. Take it easy.
Take care.
Yep. All righty. Great boxing mind there, as per usual. Good old John telling us how it is. No, I'm just kidding. Yeah, man. I mean, it's crazy. Duran, dude, he's like the fighter of the decade in the 70s. And then, oh, by the way, it's going to do what I did in the 80s, like 79. To, it's crazy. But I'm glad he pointed that out, because, like, as far as, like, the time frame, because, yeah, I think you can literally chalk it from 79 to 89 if I'm doing the dates right. And did that spill into the 90s? I think it did that to Durant. No, I don't think so. But, you know, these fights, like you say, oh, they fought a trilogy. They did that. Yeah, they did. But that shit was extended. We're talking if 7 years to take place, you know, from even being kind in their somewhat primes, 79 to 86. 86 being Leonard and Hagler. And yeah, I was frightened. I was frightened as a young kid then that my guy, Leonard would, especially when he did that comeback fight and he got knocked down. I'm like, oh, Jesus Christ. And people forget how funny all those guys were. We all knew that about Durant and stuff like that, or even like Vito the Mosquito, those type of lines from Hagler, and some stuff that Hearns and Stewart always beating the drum that nobody wants to fight him, and then, you know, clips of Leonard being the money man. So, like I meant, like we were talking about, he could, you know, he could maneuver his way how he felt it. He even gave up some of that money up front to get the right type of 12 rounds and 20 by 20 and all that. So, you know, they're just all four great fighters. And like I said, you should definitely check out that documentary. You know, the way they were doing it at the start when they were, like, stacking up the fights of Leonard on a pile of money in his total purse, I was kind of like, I hope the documentary's not like this the whole time. I got to admit, when it started, I was like, oh, I thought we were going to get into social issues and stuff like that. I don't need the total amount of, you know, every fight or whatever. But it was well done, like beyond well done, damn good. And, yeah, so that's something the boxing fan definitely to watch. A lot of old clips, a lot of Bob Arum. I mean, what's up with Bob saying the ghetto plane, though? Like, well, should I really be we've heard of the no black fighters, right? when they're building the prospect, no black fighters, they got the NBF up there on a chalkboard or whatever. but yeah, man, it's definitely good. It's definitely good. I mean, could you imagine boxing Twitter on the night of the no moss from Duran? Oh, my God. And then he still comes back and just does some shit where you're like, what? He did what to Davey Moore and Barkley? And he almost beat Hearns, for Christ's sakes. Yeah, man, it was definitely good. All right, let's go out to Portland. We still have some current fight news we're going to discuss. Talk about the undercard. Give my thoughts on some of the undercard stuff for the Wilder Fury 3, which I think is pretty dope. Like I said, current fight news, a little bit of boxing Twitter, and just all that good stuff. All right, let's go out to Portland 503. What's going on, my man? How the hell are you?
Mexicanos al grito de guerra, el acero apretado y el rigón, y retiemble en sus centros la tierra.
Hey, yo, what up, Chris? Yo, I'm doing good here in sunny-ass Oregon today. Everything is good, but how you doing, brother? How's everything, bro?
I'm doing good, man. I'm doing really good, man. It's good to hear you doing good as well. Dude, it's been hot like a mother effort here, dude. It's been hot as hell, but I'm not going to complain too much.
Nah, hell no. I'll take this weather right now, bro. So, you know what I mean? I usually have the complainer out during the wintertime all the time, so I'll take this. But, yeah, bro, a lot of fights. Let's get to it, bro. If I could really recap real quick, Mayweather, Paul, I ended up buying the fight just because I ended up kind of like last minute, like, fuck it, you know, like, let's just do
yeah,
it,
yeah.
whatever. So, you know what I mean? So, I watched it right. And, first of all, I want to shout out to Arias for pulling off the upset over Jared Herrod. You know what I mean? Shout out to him, man. And, you know, he did it in the way he, you know, you could tell the way he fought. And he was very emotional after the fight in his post-fight interview. And, you know, he was very emotional. And, you could tell, like, he was fighting for, like, his career, fighting for his dinner, fighting for, like, just – to stay fucking in alive in boxing and be talked about and not forgot about. And so, you know, you got to give the shout out to him because, man, he pulled it off. And you could just – in that performance, he just fought his ass off and then just kept coming at him, kept – put the pressure on him and kept hitting him and wouldn't stop. So, yeah.
Sure did, man.
But, best, you know what I mean? So, yeah, shout out to Eddie. Yeah, hell yeah, man. I was happy for him too. And but I was definitely sad for Jared Herd. If I could just say, because, man, I really like
yeah.
this guy. He, you know, he fights in the inside. I really like inside fighters. But I don't know, for some reason, like you were saying, Chris, earlier, like, you know, when he was up against the ropes, it wasn't working out. And I was thinking the same thing. Like, you got to turn. You got to move. And, you know, you know, the only thing I could say is the 50 Cent quote comes up from his song where he says, switch your style up and then watch your money pile up. I think he needs to definitely
yeah.
switch styles. And he definitely needs to – I always hate saying new train or something, but it's time to maybe get out of his training situation and move to – I would say, you know, because I don't know, he seems like he wants to stick to fighting in the inside. So I would say, like a great, you know, like Mexicano trainer, Joel Diaz, Robert Garcia. I know these kind of trainers will help out tremendously. I just feel maybe a training camp, a different training camp, a different style. You know, we could, you know, he's still
even
he
just
doesn't
a
have
steady
to hang his
jab.
Head.
You
mm-hmm.
know, like I remember when Madonna. Who, you know, his management early before he got with Al, you know, they'd have him in 3-week camps before fights and shit like that, which is just ridiculous.
Yeah.
But when he got with Garcia got him a jab and a full camp, and next thing you know is on. If Hearn just keeps strong with that jab, I think that's good enough. That's kind of like head movement on the way in. He's got to stick to what he knows. He's already proven now, right, that he can't do that style, that whatever the hell style he's trying to do.
Yeah, it's a lot of – it's too much waiting, in my opinion, and he just gets hit, and, you know, it's just too much. He's trying to get counters off of them and take and have little short shots in the inside, but it was just definitely not working out that night for him. And but, yeah, man, that fight is good. I wouldn't tell Jerry Hurd to hang it up. I don't want to be harsh on him because I do like him. I just, like I said, he could still make noise. It's not the end of the road for him. So I just hope he, you know, all he has to do is recover, regroup, just to have a new plan in motion, you know what I mean? You could still be in it, you know what I mean? You're still in the fight.
Yeah,
you're still there.
Yeah, he
didn't
get his ass kicked.
No, no, he didn't, yeah.
It wasn't ugly, yeah. That's a good call.
Yeah, he didn't, yeah, like you said, he didn't get his ass whooped. He didn't get knocked out. It wasn't a one-punch knockout, so it's just, you know what I mean? He just lost on the cards, and the fight was taken to him, so you know what I mean? But shout-out to Edias. He got the win. And also, too, shout-out to Badu Jack. I know you wanted the fight with fucking Pascal, and Pascal seemed to fucking test positive for everything. Yeah, test positive for everything,
they
you know, including
stuff they didn't even know existed in his body, you know?
Right? He tested everything. He probably – positive for everything, including the kitchen sink. And dude, I don't know, it was shitty, just a shitty time, because that fight was so close to being there. Obviously he got a tune-up, so you know, shout out to Badu Jack. He got a win on a big stage, so you know, shout out to him. And also the Mayweather fight, if I could just brush up on it, I thought you know, a lot of people were harsh on Mayweather. I just want to say that I just expected a little bit more. You know, like sometimes I believe, I don't know, like to me, sometimes we always, you know how we always talk about that, you know, even like an old man like Mike Tyson could, like an old 60-year-old, 70-year-old Mike Tyson would beat your ass. And, you know, this is kind of an opportunity to show that, you know, a boxer at a high, you know, an elite level fighter and, you know, pushing with a lot of experience could still knock out a YouTube guy. And I'm just sad that didn't happen. Like, I didn't like that Floyd wasn't able to, you know, hurt him or put him down.
Sure.
Or stop it before, you know what I mean? I just expected a lot more from Floyd. I know he's up in age and he had some excuses, but this wasn't even a real fight. This was a YouTuber. This is just some dude that, you know, had was 0-1 coming into the fight. And I don't know. It's just, I don't know. To me, he's like, I hate to say it, but I think Paul won the fight just because he went the distance. Like, he's got bragging rights, and you know that, you know, he could go ahead and say he went the distance with the best ever.
Hey, it
and,
helps
you know,
brother
so,
Jake like a mother effort too, if you think about it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, and because
they can
so,
always
you know,
say,
got...
"Yeah, but dude, yeah, but that happened." You know what I mean? There was even a moment, though. There was a moment when he got him with that left hook, and it did look like it affected Paul. Did you see that? Where he kind of scooped him up a little bit, and people are kind of because it was an exhibition, and I did see that. And when I look at it, it's like, damn, this is an exhibition though, and it's for Showtime, and Showtime just did a deal with Jake Paul. So is this part of just the ongoing marketing, you know, because they also had a bunch of sign-ups that night too. So when it's an exhibition, dude, you know what I mean? It's always in between. Yeah. And he told us that he wasn't really training. He was just trying to be in shape or whatever. But you're right. The fact that he went the distance, that's like winning for Jake or for Paul.
Yeah, it didn't look good. It didn't look good at all. I just, you know what I mean? Because if he should have knocked his ass out, like, you know, mid rounds or something, but didn't happen. But you know, it's just kind of sad because, like, even if it was scheduled for 12, I just it's hard not to think that Paul would have made it all 12 rounds. You know what I mean? And I don't know, just it was kind of a stain on Floyd, a stain on boxing. And but it's kind of it's behind us. Let's put it behind us, and hopefully, holy shit, hopefully, you know, Floyd, hopefully that's not the last of the, that's not the last of Floyd we see in the ring. Like, I'd hate to really think of Floyd
as this
is the final.
I hope it is. I think it needs to be if he looked that bad, you know, because he can't even do full camps, dude. He can't do eight-week camps now because he gets hurt. So I actually, I know what you're saying, like the lasting thing, but the lasting thing I remember is Pacquiao and Canelo. I don't really put this in, you know what I mean? I'd say let's not see him anymore.
Yeah, right? Yeah, definitely not see him anymore. And but yeah, he I just want to say they both are winners at the end of the night because they got a really fat paycheck at the end of the night after that one. So you know what I mean? And but as far as also to the event that happened this last weekend, Shakur Stevens, I mean, like you said earlier, Chris, it was a lackluster performance. I agree with you. He should have had some urgency to perform, to kind of put the pressure, look good, try to maybe hurt him, stop him. And, you know, it was too much of trying to wait on his opponent and trying to counter all night. But Shakur, you know, he got the win, and that's what it's about. So he moves on with his career and as a winner. So, you know, like, hopefully that Valdez fight is up in the horizon, but I just don't – maybe – I don't see it just because Shakur is still, you know, kind of building his name still. And Valdez, obviously, with the huge win over Brichette, you know, I mean, he's going to try to – I'm sure he's going to capitalize on a bigger fight or a bigger opportunity. So, you know, so but Shakur won. Shout out to the kid, the young guy. So, and like he said too, Chris, like, you know, people are always comparing him to Floyd and stuff. And I didn't see that in him, during this fight. So, but you know, I hope, we could stop the notion of saying, you know, the next Floyd.
Yeah,
exactly. Hopefully they, you know,
just like we did this with Jordan too. This guy's the next Jordan, the next, just stop, dude. Jordan's Jordan. Mayweather's Mayweather. Just stop, you know?
Yeah.
It's getting really old.
Yeah, definitely, because it's like it's every young black just a young black American fighter that always, you know what I mean, they all get labeled the next, can he be the next Floyd, can he be, you know what I mean? That's a little too harsh of a too
yeah,
much of
a
big shoes. Yeah, hell yeah. So, you know, and I'm sure Shakur Stevenson likes the idea of being the next Floyd, but also being like being criticized and you know, and being like, oh, well, Floyd would have done this at a younger age. You know, that still stings to him. So I'm sure he's hearing all about it online and everything. So, but as far as that, you know, Shakur won, and he just, you know, hopefully he gets a good fight. Like you said, hopefully maybe that his brethren that – fuck, I forgot his name. Help me out, Chris.
Herring.
I forgot his name. Herring. Yeah,
Herring.
Thank you.
Yep. Yep.
Yeah, Herring. Yeah, hopefully that fight is in the horizon for him. I would like that. So, you know, hopefully they can make that. And also shout out to Rojas, who was on the undercard and got a win over McReary. And, that, you know, that was a good
fight.
Oh,
yeah, like, yeah, yeah, that's right.
You know what I mean? So, good, yeah, ball. Another fellow Mexicano getting that stuff. So, yeah, it was good. And also, what else? I also want to shout out to Barrera, Jesus Soto Carras. They had an exhibition, I believe, in Southern California, I want to say. And it looked all right. If I was in the area, I would have definitely turned up. But, you know, it was an exhibition. You know what I mean? They got their money. So I just want to shout them out real fast. And also, Shields, Clarissa Shields MMA debut. I would really like to say, holy crap, what that girl is a born fighter. I'm just so happy that she got the win and was able to, you know, put her away in the third round after having those two rounds lost, in my opinion. So Clarissa Shields gets the win by TKO, and bro, and like I just got to say, it was just awesome to see that because I always love. You know, because I love boxing. Boxing is always first in my heart and in my soul. So if I see a boxer laying hands on an MMA fighter like that, that's just, you know, it's awesome. It's awesome to see, in my opinion, you know. So shout out to Clarissa Shields. She got her win. And, you know, hopefully she'll continue with another win. And, you know, it looks like she might be coming into boxing for her next fight. But hopefully, you know, hopefully in MMA she gets kind of I would like to see a better test after this one. This is obviously was a gimme fight, but she looked good in it. But I would love to see kind of another girl with her kind of skilled level in MMA. I'm not saying throw her in there with the wolves just yet, but she definitely needs some she needs to get her wrestling down, her ground game down, everything. So, you know what I mean? So, shout out to Clarissa Shields for getting the win. You know, that was dope to see. And also, shout out to Amanda Serrano. She also got a win in MMA this Saturday. So, you know, I believe it was a guillotine choke. And it was like in the first minute of the first round. So, shout out to her. Like in boxing, even though it's not boxing, you know, these girls are winning in MMA, so I just want to shout them out. The Munguia versus Zerameta, you know, this fight is going to be good. I believe it's on DAZN, so I'm definitely staying tuned to this one. This one should be good. And also, I like this one, the Charlo versus Juan Macias Montiel. You already know, Chris, I got Montiel on this one. Hopefully pulls off the upset, and, you know, we get a new name in the middleweight division, man. And so I would really love that. I would really love to see that. Also, we got Teofimo Lopez, George Kambosos. All I could say is that Lopez is definitely about the money. I like his style. He's definitely – all I could – you know, and I want to say something, too. A lot of this – you know, because Devin Haney has the – I would say the full belt, right, for the WBC in that weight class. But, you know, Teofimo is the man. Like, you know, he beat the man.
Yes.
So he is the man of the division.
There's
just like, because there's just so much confusion. You know, he's got, you know, Devin Haney's got the belt, but it's like, who, you know, a lot of casual fans are confused. But I can tell you straight up that Teofimo is the man of that division. Even though, you know, Haney is a champion, I still have respect for him, but – we all know Teofimo is the man of that division. You know what I mean? So like Ric Flair said, you know what I mean? To beat the man or to be the man, you got to beat the man. So, you know, so it's going to be, but also too, the, the event of the weekend and seriously, bro, I couldn't wait for this one, man. I was trying to save money for the, you know, pay. This month, man, it's going to be pay-per-view month this whole fucking month, man. Holy crap. I mean, I'm excited for this one. Chavez Jr., Anderson Silva, even though that's the co-main event, this is the fight that I've been looking forward to since it got made. This one's wild. This was in Mexico. I saw a little bit of the highlights of the press conference that was held, I believe, today or yesterday. And, man, it looked lit. It looks like the Mexicanos are ready for this one. It's just so sick. Kind of a weird exhibition fight, but I like it, man. That's all I could say. And but also
I'm surprised that Junior and Silva's not getting a little bit more attention. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I just believe because it's titled an exhibition and not a professional fight,
yeah.
So it's like,
and they're both,
you know what I mean?
So
I'm assuming
washed.
That,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. And also,
so
it's a co-main. I believe they're the co-main event. Yeah, yeah, definitely. So it's just, but I love it, man. I love this fight. I can't wait to see it. Anderson Silva, let's see what you got in boxing. But Chavez Jr. is holding boxing on his back for us, man. And you better, bro, Chavez Jr. better not fail us in this one. That's all I can say in Mexico. So, you know, shout out to Chavez.
Better than Jr. in this fight.
Oh, man, that would suck. But yo, but Senior, bro. Yo, but, you know, but Senior, man, has got a pretty good fight with him. The build-up to the fight
yeah.
has been kind of nice. They've been pushing each other during the stare-downs. Hector Camacho Jr., the son of the legend. So, you know, this one's going to be dope. I would tell the casual fans, you know, if they're waiting on they're deciding, or the casual fans are deciding, you know, what should we watch this weekend? You know, Munguia, Charlo, Teofimo. I say put your money on this Chavez Senior fight, bro. Watch this one, man. This one's going to be lit. This one's in Mexico. You know, we're out there. We're going to be, you know, supporting our own, man. And I just can't say nothing.
What's the price point, like $29.99 or $39.99?
I believe it's low. It's not that much. It's not
pretty
50.
Sure.
So I haven't checked it 100%, but it's not a $70 pay-per-view. So, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
and,
usually those
integrated
sports are cheaper, are a little bit less expensive.
Yeah, yeah.
Nope.
So definitely, man. But definitely stay tuned to this one, bro. And but yeah, man. Holy crap! Is there so many fights this weekend? I'm staying tuned to all of them, and I can't wait to talk to you about them, Chris. And yo, and also too, before I get out of here, man, I know this is kind of blasphemy talk, but yo, a Mexicano, Brandon Moreno, 125 pounder in the UFC, just won a belt. So from Mexico, from the motherland. So I want to shout out to you, man. You got it. It was a rear naked choke. I saw that, man. And holy crap, man. Let's celebrate, bro. We're celebrating with you. It's always, you know what I mean? It's always like I say, man, Viva Mexico, man. We're man, this is the year of the Mexicans, man. That's all I can say, man. I'm
it
just
is,
so
dude.
Proud. Of what has happened this year so far, man. And, man, it's just so sick. So, I you know what I mean? Moreno deserves respect. I know it's UFC, but, man, I'm just proud of this guy, you know what I mean? Because he really, man, that fight, I got to see it. And I got to see the first fight, and because I bought that pay-per-view. But I didn't buy this one just because I wanted to wait for the Chavez Jr. fight, you know what I mean? That's why. And but I'm also buying the other one. What's that? Tank Davis in the like
Barrio.
The next weekend, I believe. So
Barrio.
Like I said, man, this like I said,
this
that
might
like,
be that'd be the Mexican upset of the year right there. Well, besides
Lara, man, that would just
over Warren.
That would just solidify.
Yeah.
Yeah,
that would, dude.
But,
that would be over the top, dude.
Yeah, bro. It would be like, bro, we're like living in Mexico. Like this country has turned to Mexico. You know what I mean? So, but man, and But yeah, man, as far as that, I'm just excited about these weekends. You already know I'm telling the casual fans and the MMA fans to buy the Chavez Senior fight and the Chavez Junior fight because that one's going to be electrifying. And but yeah, man, as far as that, Chris, I don't have too much to say. You know, thank you for having me on. Viva Ropa Dope Radio and Viva Mexico, cabrones.
All right, man, you take it easy. Always good to hear you and give your takes and thoughts and whatnot. Just a little bit more left of the show, current fight news, and then we'll close on the boxing Twitter segment per usual. Talk a little Wilder Fury 3. We all know it's happening, but the tickets, I believe, either are going to go on sale or they're on a pre-sale or some shit. But the tomorrow during the afternoon, late afternoon, unless you're West Coast, then I think it's 1 o'clock. The presser. First presser, it'll be kind of interesting there. We'll talk a little bit about the undercard and just a variety of other things. It was reported, we were talking about Mayweather and Logan, that it did right around slightly more than 1 million buys. I saw a report of 600,000 or 650,000 of the, you know, the cable buys, basically, the cable operators, and then that would put it right around 400,000-ish. 350-ish on the app. So that's pretty good money. If let's say 35 to 40% of your buys are digital, that would be big. because you get to keep that money. But either way, another thing that people aren't necessarily looking at is ever since 2015 when Showtime started having a streaming service, right, this is the biggest single-day new sub sign-up for Showtime since they started with their streaming service, their standalone streaming service. So remember, this has to do with marketing as well. So let's say they broke even. You know, with these purse guarantees, who the fuck knows? I mean, we heard 20 million, 30 million. People were saying 100 million. There's so many bullshit reports out there sometimes. You don't know what's what. But this is marketing 101, though, to have that many signups. And they gave you a free month. So we were talking about that Triller Pass and how that thing's way overpriced because you're just, you know, someone did text me saying, well, if you paid 30 bucks for a month and then you deleted it, then you'd pay 30 bucks for the pay-per-view and that's it. And if you can do that, okay, that saves you 30 bucks. I'll give you that. But how many times are you going to be able to do that, though? Are they going to allow you to do that every month or every other month or when they have fights? My biggest thing is the price point, one. But two, you don't even have announced fights. Now, I assume they're going to announce Oscar's fight and maybe Holyfield fight. If they don't, after this weekend, they're just silly to try to sell that fight pass. But I'm assuming they're going to announce Oscar's fight, and Holyfield's supposed to have a fight as well. But they, back to that Showtime sign-up, they set the one-day record of sign-ups. So they gave people a 30-day free trial, and then after that expires for 3 months, it's $4.99. So, and look at their schedule. It goes till September. So basically, for a boxing event, you know, for a boxing, four months basically, Showtime's got some bomb-ass fights. And then obviously, beyond just sports documentary, they have good, they have good to great documentaries. And they have shows and movies. So, I mean, that's a damn good – we talk about entertainment value. That's pretty good. You know, we've kind of talked through a lot of this weekend stuff. There is some other news. Top Rank at Sky Sports struck a 4-year deal Shakur Stevenson and his fight was on there. Obviously, Eddie Hearn, no surprise, went to DAZN. We've known that for quite some time. And so that's where, you know, Top Rank's been kind of all over the place. I felt bad for the UK there for a while because they were missing out on certain fights or maybe even like a inexpensive pay-per-view or whatever. But now their fights are going to be shown, Top Rank fights, on Sky Sports. And also, just to keep it in that realm, Teofimo Lopez in Top Rank basically amended their deal. So the minimum purses will go up in general. But also, if he's on pay-per-view, clearly your purse is going to go up. And according to Coppinger, you know, after this fight, they're going to be looking for an October 2nd name to put him in with. So what, you know, they kind of made it seem a little weird about the Haney thing because he still has an issue with Eddie Hearn and DAZN. Like they have, I think it's a match, you know. We can match someone's offer, so we have a right to match refusal or whatever. So if they send, you know, Hearn an offer, he can match it. And so that wouldn't be on ESPN Plus. They want it on their pay-per-view, I should say. Now, hopefully this deal isn't he's going to be on ESPN pay-per-view all the time because, to be honest with you, they don't have a lot of opponents beyond Josh Taylor for him. Pay-per-view level anyway. So hopefully it's ESPN Plus and then pay-per-view for some of these opponents. You know, hopefully it's ESPN as well. But the way Coppinger made it sound, you know, I don't know. Now, Top Rank, this is actually in that article with that Sky Sports thing. It sounds like they would, here's the quote, Top Rank will ramp up putting on events in the U.K., that would air in Sky Sports primetime. And so that would probably be on ESPN Plus over here, and then primetime there. They'll probably do some of that, according to them. As we know, it looks like Fury, and this is Jake Donovan, Fury and Wilder 3 will be at the T-Mobile Arena. They're putting a venue hold on it. So maybe it's not going to be at that big stadium. And now, you know, maybe they say, hey, we can actually sell this out normally. We don't have to space it out in the stadium. Who knows? Speaking of stadium, Canelo and Saunders, the numbers are in. 66,000 tickets sold and a $9 million gate. So that's like pretty close to what I think, was it 12 million that Klitschko and was it 10 or 12 million that Klitschko and Joshua did. I know he's done some other gates right around that. So yeah, 9 million off of that live gate. We got the number back. The Wilder Fury, just to stay in that realm too. Obviously we know, you know, July 24th, we'll get everything finalized tomorrow for sure. Of course, Fury and Wilder in the, you know, in the main event, the trilogy, but then it's Efe Ajagba, an unbeaten contender, we'll call him, against Frank Sanchez, an unbeaten contender, we'll call him, prospect. So two unbeaten guys, one with Top Rank, one with the PBC. Efe used to be with the PBC, but he's no longer. So I love that. They're not young guys. They're not super old either. Sanchez is older, but I like that. Two undefeated guys, you know, let's see what they got. And then Hellenius and Koznoski, which was a damn good fight while it lasted. Koznoski had the advantage, had Hellenius hurt early, ended up getting hurt and getting knocked out. But that's a good heavyweight fight, just action-packed. Casuals will like that, Hellenius and Konaki. So those are two good, really, fights. And then Jared Anderson, an up-and-coming hot prospect in the heavyweight division, is on the card too. So I'm very, very happy. Eddie Hearn stated, this is from DAZN Boxing, the DAZN Boxing show, that they will be making an offer to Caleb Plant this week. He expects from DAZN, and then he expects, you know, PBC and Fox to give Canelo an offer. One thing he did say is he's worried about the August, like the July. Well, we talked about some of the pay-per-views, which most of them are exhibitions besides one. Two. Triller's not an exhibition either. But you look at July has one. August will have two. And then, you know, 3 weeks later, something like that, three weeks later, I think, would be that when he said he's worried about the paper. So, which kind of sounds like, hold on, dude, I thought you were just, are you advising him or are you working this deal and negotiating with him? You know, I just hope he keeps the negotiations out of the media. That's what I hope. Jermell Charlo versus Brian Castaño for the Undisputed at 154 will be taking place July 17th. As we know, at the AT&T Center in San Antonio, Texas, it sounds like. So that's kind of I didn't know exactly if that would be the venue or something like that. So that's kind of interesting. That's kind of interesting. What else we got for news? I think it's mostly boxing Twitter with a little blend of it. This is Shakur Stevenson on Twitter. I apologize to all my fans. I didn't feel good tonight, did what I had to do to get the win. Thank you for all the support. I promise a better fight, in fights to come, which, you know, I understand why he's saying that. Many casual boxing fans overlook a boxer's technical boxing abilities and want boxers to be knocked out, boxers to knockout, I think he meant, punchers over anything. The sad thing is many of these writers are acting like these casuals. That's fair, but I don't really think that everybody was saying you need to stop them. You just need to throw more punch. You know, how about a two-punch combo? Would that be too much? Here we go. So we found out why, and I kind of heard some rumors of this, but I didn't want to say it for sure. I wanted to get back to you guys. But and actually, Deuce Ranger Rollins on Twitter, great follow, by the way. Shouts out to you, Deuce. You know, according to Eddie Hearn said this, that, you know, the reason why the John Ryder-Morrell fight didn't happen is because he actually was looking for a better purse split from the WBA. So he basically was like, either you give us a better purse split, which would allow him to bid and buy the fight and bring it to the UK, or we're not going to do the fight, period. We're not going to do it at the Armory. So that's what it was. But then I hear this, Ryder may be moving up to face Dimitri Bivol at 175. And it's like, I get why you take a bigger, more money fight to go up there. But damn, that going up there, I'm not quite sure on that one. This is actually John. We had him on earlier on Twitter. How does Triller go from some entertaining, wacky stuff featuring old boxers and a Paul brother to getting their pocket picked by Showtime and ending up with an alphabet mandatory mismatch on pay-per-view broadcast by Jim Lantley? And that is a good call, because Triller were making fun of, you know, the debacle that exhibition was, but they had plenty of debacles. My experience has Money and Sweet Pea being debated as the best defensive fighter in my lifetime. Shakur is already harder to hit than both of those legends. Give me a fucking break, dude. I love me some Shakur Stevenson in a lot of ways, you know. But come on, dude. Like, let him fight someone before you. Whitaker and Mayweather defense? Come on, dude. Oh, this is Rick. Next week, I hope to wrap up 6 fight deals, including a world title, world title eliminators, 3 main events, 2 co-main events, and a TV opener, and an arena fight that would break California attendance this year to promote. Interesting. This is Jim Karras, boxing good follower too, great follower for betting and all that. Babic won, by the way. He blew somebody out. I forgot to mention that too. And I'm glad that Portland mentioned Shields and Serrano. This is when I was going to mention him during that. Babic will never even, basically he's a goon. Babic will never get even close to being world level, but it's going to be a fun ride watching his career. Every shot is thrown with full power, and he has no regard for what's coming back. He's a beauty. He is. He's just that goon level dude who's just, you know, fun to watch. This is Bruce Trampler from Top Rank. Long time with Top Rank. People asking me about the recent Floyd Mayweather exhibition, and I thought it was terrific for fans to see an all-time great in action one more time. I was on several exhibition tours with Muhammad Ali, Mike Tyson, George Foreman. Fans loved it. All the greats did it. And that is one of those things that people don't realize, that so many, you know, so many people did that. Legend. Bivol had a nice little run going. Barrera, Pascal, and Smith. Last two fights have been a waste with Castillo and Richards. Now it's being said he could fight Ryder moving up to 168 next. Matchroom are wasting one of the best talents in the sport. I mean, I got to admit, some of that's true. Okay, here's what De La Hoya said with what he wants to do with Zerto Ramirez, who they just signed. De La Hoya, we want to get Zerto Ramirez to 52-0 and break the record of Floyd Mayweather. Well, wouldn't that be 50-0? We won't get into that. But then Harry Smith says, Zerto is a great fighter, and once he gets his 52-0 record, it will be interesting to see what he can do when he steps up the competition. Very exciting, eventually. What? Like, huh? Like, that's what we're going with? Like, so we're going to, I mean, so you're not going to put him, so you're excited to watch him fight. He's 41-0 right now. So he's going to fight another 9 fights or 10, 12 fights. Like, first of all, he's got to get by Sullivan Barrera coming up, you know. But it's just like, I just see there's some fanboy stuff or people that will just like one side for the hell of it, but how could you look at that and go, yeah, dude, I'm pumped, dude. Once he gets 10 more fights, it's really going to be interesting to watch his career. So don't get me wrong, I like Zerto, but he's just got to, you know, he's just got to fight somebody. At age 47, Bernard Hopkins fought above his natural weight and won a world title from someone who's still ranked at 175. What's Floyd's excuse? The thing is, that was an exhibition. People really just, oh, it's so funny. Like, so is that what we're gonna go with that? We're gonna be like, all right, so everybody who ever fought has to do what Bernard Hopkins did. Because Bernard, now how about, that's, it just goes with this Manny Pacquiao Floyd stuff now too. I can big up and give a bunch of credit to Manny Pacquiao and Bernard Hopkins without dumping on another fighter. In this case, we're talking about Floyd Mayweather. Just a way to dump on fighters, no matter who's involved with this stuff. It's just funny how people will tweak their little stuff to make sure that they can get a shot at someone. It's really funny. This was from Lazy Lefty. I think I mentioned this a little earlier. Herring makes a good point when he said fighting Valdez is better business and legacy. Shakur jumped on a restaurant table saying he wants to fight him. Now Shakur said he'd rather fight Valdez because it's good business, and he easily beat Herring. That is kind of funny. Stevenson has said a bunch of stuff like, oh, this guy ducked me, and, you know, I can get a tune-up fight in, but he can't. I'm ready to fight, you know, 6 to 8 weeks later. Just all sorts of stuff without just going right at it. Sean Gibbons and Victor Conte, you really need to get on Twitter. And, I mean, wow. Wow. Okay, Major, this is, oh, man, this is the tweet of the day or of the week, which is so silly, too. Major props to Clarissa Shields, the only boxer. Now, remember, the only boxer with the guts to step into MMA and have an actual fight under their rules. The only boxer, they just said. So Amanda Serrano, screw her, right? I guess she's not stepping up in the MMA. Heather Hardy, she's not? I mean, do we even have to mention the, you know, Holly Holm, the girl who stopped this crazy huge women's star, you know, and Rousey, but yet she to sit there and this has got to be trolling, but you know, I didn't see him really respond to people like, oh, my bad. So basically anybody that, remember, it's MMA fighters that are challenging boxers because this is their biggest payday. As we know, the UFC doesn't fall under the Ali Act, which allows fighters and their management to see everything to do with the event. You know, back in the day when HBO would give money to your promoter, you get to see how much money they gave to your promoter, how much, you know, what's your budget on the whole card, what do you expect to make, what's your overhead, all this stuff, right? And that's why fighters generally get like 70-80% of the money when it's just the flip way with UFC. But to sit there and say she's the only boxer with the MMA, boxers aren't calling out MMA people because they know that's a different sport. That's what they say all the time. It really started with Anderson Silva and Roy Jones Jr. That's the first one that I remember. Don't get me wrong. I know old-ass, fat-ass James Toney got in the ring, right? I know that, but I'm saying as far as a real fight that got people's interest, that they were talking about it, it was Anderson Silva and Roy Jones Jr. This is like literally over a decade ago, and that's what got people pumped. But remember, it hasn't been Mayweather. He tells you that they're like all these famous fighters, boxers, are not saying, dude, those MMA dudes are bullshit. I can go in that cage and kick their ass. They're not saying that shit. I've never heard any of them say that. Now, you know, maybe someone that wrestled in high school at a high level, there has been some of those guys where they say they think they get hang or something. But it hasn't been this big call out, like, you're afraid of me to jump into MMA. You're afraid for a boxer to come. Like, it's just so stupid. It's such a trolling tweet, especially when you have Serrano. Holly Holm knocked out Rousey, dude. That was supposed to be the best. I mean, don't tell this to Serena Williams, but that was supposed to be the best all-time ever female athlete. Forget Martina Navratilova. You know, forget all these track stars. Like, for real, dude? Like, it's just, man. Some of these, oh, my God. It's like, see, there it goes. You got to dump on something to give someone props. Can't you just say it's bomb that Clarissa Shields? Listen to what Portland just said. That is dope she went and did this. It's cool to see a boxer do that. And it is. It takes guts. But to say you don't have the guts, they don't have the guts. Oh, yeah, like, so how many more deaths over the years have happened? You want to talk about guts. How many deaths have happened? You know, it's proven now for quite some time that if you want to talk about death and brain damage, boxing is more dangerous. I mean, Dana White says it all the time. So this whole guts thing, fighting is fighting, dude. I respect both. I wrestled in high school, so I've always respect MMA. And my friends will always be like, don't put me in a move. And I didn't even do jiu-jitsu or nothing like that. You know what I mean? But it just, I can't believe you're just going to gloss over Serrano and especially Holly Holm, who stopped the hype train. I mean, Rousey got on the cover of Ring Magazine, for Christ's sake. And Holly Holm put a stop to that shit. Knocked her teeth out, dude. But Clarissa, and I'm not dogging on Clarissa. It does take, you know, guts, but it takes guts to be a fighter. Either side, MMA. But it's always been the MMA folks that would be like, oh, boxing, we killed boxing. Boxing's dead. Why did an exhibition where the star of the show said it's a legal bank robbery, I'm working out every 3 days to not get hurt, why'd that do over a million? Why are all these biggest paydays for, you know, Woodley's about to get his biggest payday coming out of a long run of UFC. It's like, guy, you guys are really worried about your sport too much. Like, you just, oh, man, it is funny. Like, how you gonna dog Serrano, dude? She's a stud, dude. Like, and I mean that in the nicest way. I know she's a pretty lady. I'm not trying to say stud. Like, she's very pretty, too. But I'm just saying, like, oh, my God. I got to stop the show. I'm going to just keep this going too long. All right, we'll be back next week per usual. Let's hope we get these undercard bouts to hopefully there's undercard fights that pop off, right, that are competitive two-way fights. And then the main events are fun while they lasted, but they ended knockout. We'll be back next week. It might be another Monday, so stay tuned. Anyway, enjoy the fights. See you soon. Peace.
Once you become the world champion, I believe that you feel you have the upper hand. So now, as you fight, let's say you fight 4 or 5 years of straight survival, the bullshit, the whole bag, and when you become the world champion, like, you know what, I made it. That will show you it's this. So I'm going to get any dollar worth of what I deserve. Why? Because I'm the world champion.